enjoying the day off, and we'll be back tomorrow. And stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show, which is coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. 58,000 gallons of oil in the San Francisco Bay and a Coast Guard Rear Admiral, Craig Bone, on the defense.
We did throw everything we had at it. And we didn't back off, and we haven't backed off since.
Much of the oil dissipating, much of it covering the bay's beaches.
What I saw was not a lot of oil at all. Very, very little recoverable oil. So that's a good thing. We're going to transfer our concentration from all these skimming operations and offshore skimming operations to actually get the beaches cleaned up, because that's where the oil is now.
Coast Guard Captain William Uberti there. KCBS's Bob Melrose after checking out some of the victims of the oil spill.
An oil bird is just like completely black. It is very traumatized. It squeals. It pecks at itself. It just is very lethargic as well. They don't eat. The temperature goes down.
Criminal charges being considered against the crew of the ship that spilled the oil. Happy holidays now. From CBS's Bob Fuss.
The airlines think around 27 million passengers will fly during the 12 days around Thanksgiving, 4% more than last year. That crunch time starts this Friday, and planes are expected to be 90% full. James May of the Air Transport Association has this advice.
Show up early for your flights, 2 hours for domestic flights, 3 hours for international flights.
He says airlines are taking steps to avoid delays, but even before the holidays, they aren't doing very well, with about a quarter of all flights running late. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Washington.
Those questions coming from the Iowa audience were really planted by the Hillary Clinton campaign? Really? The candidate says she knew nothing.
Well, it was news to me, and neither I nor my campaign approve of that, and it will certainly not be tolerated.
Acclaimed film director Delbert Mann is dead. He won an Oscar for 1955's Marty. So did Ernest Borgnine in the title role.
You didn't feel like you were actually acting. You felt the part. You felt the character. You felt everything. And he was that kind of a director that got it out of you.
Delbert Mann was 87. It's day 3 of the stagehand strike on Broadway.
Here I go again. Bye.
More than 24 shows are dark, from Mamma Mia to The Color Purple, Spamalots to Chicago.
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz.
The rest of the town getting painted pretty well. Off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway shows are packed. Police in Finland say the teenager who killed 8 others and himself in a high school shooting had internet contacts with a Pennsylvania teen who's accused of plotting a possible school attack here. Wall Street couldn't sustain its early rounds. Stocks closing with a steep decline this afternoon. The Dow losing 55 points, dropping below 13,000 for the first time since mid-August. The loss comes on a day when crude oil prices weakened and the dollar got stronger. This is CBS News.
Reason number 17 to switch to Geico. This is just your way of saying hi. If you love motorcycles, you need to call Geico, because now Geico offers insurance on all the stuff that moves you, including motorcycles. Great rates, great coverage, and personal service 24/7. Call anytime, 1-800-44-CYCLE, or visit geico.com.
You know, a wise man once said, success is easy. Do the right thing the right way at the right time. Simple, right? Of course, small business owners will tell you that finding time is what makes it tough. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted at millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/small business. Business takes Visa.
Got art? Your kids will be better off if they do.
A new Harris poll suggests a link between getting a musical education as a kid and becoming more successful later in life.
We're lining a better Friday.
That suggestion is no surprise to little Stephen Van Zandt, the soprano star and guitarist in Bruce Springsteen's band.
Art is not a luxury in life. And I don't know how that rumor started, but it's simply not true. Art is an essential part of the quality of our lives.
Van Zandt says he hopes as Congress debates changes in the No Child Left Behind law, members will make music education part of the core curriculum. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
Police in Pakistan confirming that opposition leader Benazir Bhutto is under house arrest and will not be allowed to come out, not for a week. It is an attempt to prevent her from leading a protest across the country of Pakistan to protest emergency rule. Hundreds of cops surrounding her home. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Sam's Club has cranberry pomegranate pork loin. Would that be good? Oh, it's so good.
Why do you look like me?
I'm future you. And because of that pork loin, there are 10 very satisfied people in our living room.
But I only invited 5 people. Word gets around.
Join us November 16th through the 18th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club. There are chef demonstrations, food samples, and party supplies. Sam's Club. Enjoy the possibilities. Join today to avoid the 10% service fee that applies to non-member purchases.
Next time your grandkids ask if frogs have noses, what will you be thinking about? Hopefully not your Medicare plan. Review your plan and options during Medicare's open enrollment, November 15th to December 31st. Once you know you have the right plan, you can get on with the important things in life, like discussing amphibian facial features. For open enrollment details, consult your Medicare and You handbook. Call 1-800-MEDICARE or visit Medicare.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today. If you're cruising around in your car, thank you for dialing one of our affiliate radio stations. And yes, this is the official designated Veterans Day holiday, but we are here live. We didn't take the day off. Lots to talk about, some great people to talk with, and your phone calls, too, over the next 3 hours. First up, we're going to talk about Hillary Clinton. Have they been feeding her softball questions? Later this hour, a great book about a bad guy. It's called Prince of Darkness. Alan Weissman is the author of this profile of Richard Pearl. He just claims the credit as architect of the invasion of Iraq, but it's one of his few moments of modesty. Also on our program today, Deborah Johaniak, I hope I'm saying her name right, is the author of Behind the Veil. It's a personal memoir of the 1979 Iran hostage crisis. I think you'll find that interesting, and it'll expose some of the roots of current conflicts between the U.S. and Iran. Our observance of Veterans Day with Jeff Millard. He served in Iraq. He is a co-founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War. And he's also a journalist with truthout.org. Does a lot of great reporting there. He will join us. And one of the things we're going to celebrate is that the Army has said they are not going to pursue further court-martial attempts against Lieutenant Aaron Watada. That's a victory for refuseniks, and I'm just thrilled about it. Also on today's show, Larry Collins, who is the president of the San Francisco Crab Boat Owners Association, is going to help me a little therapy through the difficult news that the crab season has been postponed indefinitely. Now, that's my personal loss. The real loss is to the ecosystems of San Francisco Bay due to that 58,000-gallon oil spill from a Chinese-flagged freighter.
I got to correct that. It has a Chinese name on the side. We're not sure exactly where the damn ship is flagged or even who owns it. Also on today's show, Aldous Tyler of Nonstop Radio, working to preserve and expand progressive talk in this country. And he wants to invite you to a seminar in steaming Madison, Wisconsin next August. We'll tell you all about it. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your calls and comments welcome now or at any time. Call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Ari Melber from The Nation will join us in just a moment. But seconds before we launched our broadcast today, I received the latest dispatch from Andy Borowitz, and it is on point. So, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you the fictional portion of our broadcast day. Headline reads, Hillary refuses to answer paper or plastic question, calls cashier's query hypothetical. Senator Hillary Clinton raised eyebrows in Iowa when she refused to respond to a supermarket cashier's question about her preference for paper or plastic bags, calling the inquiry totally hypothetical. Mrs. Clinton's aversion to hypothetical questions has been a hallmark of her quest for the presidency, but her refusal to answer the paper or plastic question during a campaign stop in Davenport took even some of her closest supporters aback. The paper or plastic business is one of those gotcha questions that I'm not going to get into, Hillary said. I don't want to be in a situation where I've chosen one and that takes the other one totally off the table. Shunning both paper and plastic, Mrs. Clinton left the store clutching an unwieldy assortment of groceries in her bare hands. This was the second bump in the road for Hillary today, coming just hours after a citizen who posed a question to her in a town hall meeting was revealed to be her husband, former President Bill Clinton, dressed as a woman. President Clinton, wearing a blonde wig and an Ann Taylor wrap dress, asked Mrs. Clinton, will your presidency continue the glorious legacy of my, I mean, your husband's terms in office? All right, so that's the Borowitz take on it. Ari Melber broke this story. I first read his account over the weekend. The New York Times has picked it up. And credit goes to a young journalist at Grinnell College in Iowa who helped break this in the first place. Ari Melber from The Nation, welcome back to our program today.
Good to be here, and I'd like to salute all the veterans and military families out there on this Veterans Day.
All right. That's a wonderful thing to say. And you want to salute Andy Borowitz, too?
He's on the money.
Well, it certainly is a humorous take on a story that could be one of those things that might just derail Hillary's inevitability. Because I think that when John Edwards says that we know that President Bush only accepts friendly questions from screened audiences and that Democrats don't do that, I think this could go a long way toward undermining her credibility and her lead in the polls.
I actually agree, although some viewers, listeners might think, well, aren't there more important issues? But this really cuts to how we discuss all the issues. And we are coming out of 7 years of very intense media manipulation and intimidation, along with, as everyone knows, a real assault on our First Amendment freedoms and the way we conduct democracy. So when you have a would-be Democratic challenger to that Bush approach, potentially adopting similar tactics in what are supposed to be grassroots town halls, what is supposed to be the key to the Iowa caucus, scrutiny and grassroots questions, it does raise a lot of concern.
Well, and this is not the first time, as your article at thenation.com explains. She got caught doing this in April, on April 2nd and April 3rd. Both the incidents occurred in Iowa. So it does appear that they have been attempting to manipulate and manage these interactions with alleged real people.
That's right, and that's what reports have surfaced. As you mentioned, Patrick Caldwell, student reporter for the Grinnell College paper, first broke this story on Friday regarding an event that was earlier in the week, Tuesday. And according to his reporting, two different students were approached by Hillary campaign operatives to ask specific questions, to plant basically fake questions. And so there's a couple of things here. One, first, is why are we learning this from a great, intrepid student reporter who's at his only event of the year, and not from the reporters who go to all these events and are supposed to tell us what's happening? And so I think that's a great statement about Patrick Caldwell as a future crusading journalist.
Well, let's get specific here, Ari Melber. This is the perfect Fox News story. And, you know, we really should shame them because of their failure to get it first.
Well, you know, it all depends. It all depends on the target, because Fox has shown more vigor in attacking, you know, Democrats than anyone else. But I got to tell you, so the student basically went and did what apparently beat reporters, and for your audience to know, I'm not traveling with the campaign either. But what the beat reporters do is they go to these different events, but none of them noticed apparently or thought to investigate anything about these questions. So he found these two fake questions. The first was about global warming from a young student who was approached by the campaign and then asked the question that the campaign wanted, which was, as a young person, I'm concerned about global warming. How will your plan combat it? And then he also had a second question, although he did not report on what the content was. Now, I should say the Hillary campaign, I spoke with them today even, continues to say these are isolated events from overzealous people on the ground. This is not a policy. But as you said, there's a pattern here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when she poses under a mission accomplished banner, we'll know that the fix is completely in. Ari Melber's with us from The Nation. He's also written a powerful, is it more than one story, the Alternet series?
I've written one piece for them about these rights and liberties. They're doing a whole series with different folks. Yes.
That's what it is. Okay, I knew it was a package. I wasn't sure how much you had contributed, but I have a story here from November 10. Will Democrats restore our liberties stolen in the Bush era? And after I read your piece, I jotted a note down here, and it reads, "Give me some activist judges, please, and now." tell us what the theme of your article here is. You're talking about the rollback in our civil liberties, the illegal spying on Americans, which has now been sanctioned by the Democrats in Congress, and they're struggling to undo that bad fix that they agreed to in August. And you point out that it's not a big item for most candidates. Chris Dodd, of the Democratic presidential candidates, has been the one who is most focused on these civil liberties issues.
That's right. And I basically tried to go in and really look at the legislative proposals and other detailed policies that the Democratic candidates have advanced regarding our constitutional rights. And so Senator Dodd has done the most. Senator Biden also has a very good bill, although he has no co-sponsors for it, that would address black sites and torture and Army field manual reforms. And then as you go down the list, Senators Clinton and Obama and former Senator Edwards have spoken out on these issues. They've talked about habeas corpus, but they have not moved as aggressively as Dodd and others to really get behind comprehensive policies, let alone, of course, highlight this on the campaign trail. And so, briefly, I looked at that and then looked at some of the polling and found that not only Democrats, who are going to decide this nomination, but also independent voters have overwhelmingly high support for these constitutional rights issues. And then second, dug into the next wave of reform we need, which really comes back to the courts. Mm-hmm. And I talk about the state secrets privilege and some other real abuses of national security doctrine under the Bush administration that has made it so difficult to get accountability for some of these war crimes and spying, and how Democrats should really step that up, which we hardly hear anything about.
Yeah, I'd love to see a Democratic presidential candidate adopt Sybil Edmonds and take her on the campaign trail and show how courageous she has been despite the gag orders imposed on her by Ashcroft and Gonzalez relative to that very funky state secret privilege that they assert.
Yeah, and Edmonds is a perfect example. This is someone who cares deeply about her country, is a patriot, and serves her country, and is not only raising important concerns about rights, which, again, this piece was all about, but also talks about general incompetence and without oversight and without a strong court review of administration activity. You have plain old incompetence, and that's a problem for protecting the nation as well. So it really is, frankly, a no-brainer. And on the state secrets front, you know, what I argue is that originally the conservative movement had a lot of trouble, an uphill battle explaining the complex issues around strict construction and some of their pet legal theories, as well as the unitary executive. But they worked hard, and first they sold that to their own folks, their base, and then moved it up to their leadership. And I think progressives, anti-war community, and the civil liberties community, as I argue on alternate, need to start raising the state secrets privilege and raising these judicial doctrines so that our folks know this is a key issue, and we want strong judicial nominees and courts who will make the administration accountable.
We're going to take a break and return with Ari Melber. He writes for The Nation, and one of the articles we cited is available at alternet.org. If you have a question or comment, join us now toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, subject to monitoring by the National Security Administration.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
Are you looking for that new dream home at a price that's not a dream? At Pacific Pride Homes, we really do take pride in the small number of custom homes we build every year and the fact that we can offer estate-quality homes without the estate price. We are now providing special financing and pricing on two of our beautiful new custom homes located in gated communities in North Monterey County. We invite you to visit us at PacificPrideHomes.com for details and directions.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree, we have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas, and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah. Christmas is fun. I mean, we start the kickoff with for the season, the first weekend in November, with an open house, and we have homemade refreshments. In December, we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626, and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes and schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Jim's Restaurant is celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Join the party. Enjoy Jim's lunch specials for just $5.75 and dinner specials for only $6.50 per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays from 4 to 5 p.m., listen as we deal with life-changing issues that affect all of us. Our fears, passions, anger, addictions, the law of attraction, and how we change ourselves so we can live an extraordinary life. Join me, Sheila Gale, as we share tools for change that work. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Life 105, Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers with education, prevention, and treatment for alcohol and drug addiction.
Hey, this is Larry from Acme Coffee, and if, like me, you own a business and are tired of waiting through aggressive sales reps pushing you to advertise on mediocre network TV stations or stale radio broadcasters, contact KRXA 540 sales manager Larry Rathall at 394-5792. AM 540's committed listener base will help you grow your business. I know, because they're helping me grow mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I am still your humble host, Peter B. Homeland Security has not come for me to declare me an unlawful enemy combatant and send me on a one-way trip to Gitmo. But my last conversation with a guy who sounded like Dick Cheney indicated that, the tickets are already in the mail. We continue with Ari Melber. He writes at thenation.com. And I just want to cite some of these statistics. We're talking about Democrats and the way the presidential candidates really have not stepped up on these security issues, constitutional matters related to spying on American citizens. And in a survey of Democrats in September, 81% flatly oppose torture, 70% favor restoring habeas corpus, and 69% want to close Guantanamo. And Ari, Hillary Clinton is always accused of taking the most popular positions. Why can't we get her on board on these?
You know, it's a really good question. Senator Edwards has taken to criticizing Clinton for having a primary mode and a general election mode. And that may be something that voters need to consider. I can't speculate on her motives. I have heard her speak very forcefully about restoring habeas corpus, and that's why she opposed the Military Commissions Act. And she also did vote correctly against Bush's surveillance bill in August, which was an abomination that some Democratic leaders in Congress supported,
yeah,
but Clinton and the other presidential candidates did not. But when you dig in deeper past those major, I would say, slightly more well-known issues, and you get into the unitary executive and the state secrets privilege, which the administration has used more than any other in history to shut down oversight and shut down legitimate challenges, we don't hear that. And I do think, to get to your question, I do think it's because some of these issues get a little obscure. So she talks about habeas corpus. She checks the box like other candidates have, and that's good. That's a step. But we don't hear it plugged into a larger narrative about accountability and beating back the effort of the Bush administration to protect lawbreakers, both in the White House and in the telecommunications companies and in Blackwater, so that they don't have to abide by American law, and that is wrong.
Yeah. Ari, I want to jump to one other story. You've been too prolific lately, one of the hardest-working freelancers in the media. At American Prospects website at prospect.org, you posted an article just today talking about Barack Obama's resolution, which would prevent the president from invading Iran without further approval. It states that any attack has to be explicitly authorized by Congress. And you make a very powerful point here that if Obama attempts to take this resolution to the floor and fails, it could actually be worse than not attempting to have passed it. Explain.
That's right. The Kyle Lieberman Amendment used some hawkish language to dial up pressure on Iran, but ultimately it remains a non-binding resolution sense of the Senate attached to other binding legislation. The previous war resolutions that authorized force and thus led to war with Iraq and Afghanistan, are already on the books. But to go up there and dig right into this controversial theory that somehow the administration already has the authority to go into Iran and lose is very risky, because there will be hawks and there will be irresponsible people supporting a Bush power grab who would use that, just as a legislative record, that failed floor vote, to argue that thus a majority of the Senate apparently thinks Bush already does have the Iran authority.
And Ari, the only disagreement I have with you, I think, is minor, but you argue that the Kyle Lieberman Amendment didn't really open the door to an attack on Iran because it's non-binding. But we have seen them use the language designating the Iranian Republican Guard as a terrorist organization to justify the recent sanctions that were unilaterally ramped up. So I do think that the administration sees it as a support for their intentions.
Yes, but here's where I go on the actual war, because my piece is about whether this is going to be used to attack or invade Iran. The administration has other claims from the 2001 September 14th authorization that they have cited before with regard to invading other countries.
And Ari, I've got to stop there. We've got much more to talk about, but the clock has run. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Peter.
Ari Melber here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Smart Balance Buttery Spread and by Home Medics Blood Pressure Monitors. I'm Charles Osgood. For the first time, scientists have been able to clone embryos from primates, in this case adult monkeys. A technological breakthrough reportedly done by scientists in Oregon working with a group in China. It will not be considered good news by many people because it opens the door to something with profound ethical implications.
We could see human cloned embryos made using the exact techniques used to make these monkeys within a year or two. Immediately after that, there's no reason to think that someone who wanted to couldn't try to see whether they could clone a human being.
The story after this for Home Medics. To know your risk of heart disease, it's important to make a habit of checking your blood pressure regularly. That's why owning a Home Medics blood pressure monitor is so important. Home Medics blood pressure monitors come in a wide variety of models with innovative features like the irregular heartbeat detector and risk category indicator. Only the Home Medics BPA 300 blood pressure monitor uses DK technology. That's a breakthrough that takes readings the way your doctor would. Its built-in microphone actually listens when taking a reading, using sound and pressure to deliver the most accurate measurement. All models feature supersized, easy-to-read digits. Home Medics makes taking your blood pressure so convenient, it will surely become another daily habit, an important habit to cultivate. I have one at home and use it regularly. Blood pressure monitors from Home Medics, the leader in health and wellness. They're the ones to trust, available at Walgreens and other fine retailers. Until now, no one has ever been able to produce primate embryos from adult stem cells. But a Russian-born scientist at the Oregon Primate Center, Dr. Shukrat Mitalipov and his colleagues, have reportedly pioneered a new procedure using microscopic technique that does not use ultraviolet light or dyes, which appear to damage primate eggs. Dr. Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania.
You use any cell from an adult body, and you take the DNA out of that cell and put it into an egg from which you've removed the DNA. Fuse that together, and all of a sudden, in maybe 1 in 200, 1 in 300 times, it becomes an embryo.
No live births have been reported, but apparently they did extract stem cells and have managed to encourage these to develop into mature heart cells and brain neurons. Dr. Kaplan says it's been pure research so far.
When you do what they did, you are basically working in a dish. If you want to do research, you keep things in the dish. If you want to try and make a new monkey or a cloned human, if you're using the same techniques on a human embryo, then you have to implant it into a human womb.
Which, of course, does have ethical implications, but any cell in your body has the potential of becoming another you.
The DNA will match yours, and you won't have to take any drugs, and you won't have to worry about the body attacking any cells that come from that cloned embryo.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
At Homescapes Carmel, we search far and near to find the best locally made, American made, and imported furnishings the world has to offer. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I scour the globe to find unique, unusual, and unmatched merchandise to help you personalize your home and garden. We're proud to offer a variety of products such as cabinets, lamps, and vases made with bamboo, plantation teak, and other renewable and reclaimed resources. These items are beautiful, durable, and most of all, eco-friendly. So stop by Homescapes Carmel on the corner of 7th and Dolores, or visit homescapescarmel.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Alan Weissman used to work for CBS News. He's written a powerful book about Richard Pearl. And I think Mick Jagger wrote this song about Pearl. called My Sweet Neocon.
You call yourself a Christian.
Well, that doesn't apply.
I think that you're a hypocrite. You say you are a patriot.
Now, what rhymes with hypocrite?
I think that you're a quackish.
Oh, gotta be careful there.
And it's not out of gasoline. I drink it every day. But it's getting very pricey. And who is gonna pay?
And who is gonna pay? How come you're so wrong, he's singing.
My sweet Neocon.
This brand new book about Richard Pearl is based on a nickname he acquired over the years called Prince of Darkness, subtitled The Kingdom, the Power, and the End of Empire America. Alan Weissman, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to talk with you, and I want to dive into your book here in just a moment, but I can't resist in your bio. You worked at CBS for a long time, going all the way back to the Paley era, when it was the Tiffany Network. There was a firewall between news and advertising and entertainment.
Yep.
And you watched it all change.
Sadly, yeah. It began in 1981, 82, and the wall started to come down then, and I don't think the organization ever recovered from any of that. It never recovered from the change in the news department management. It never recovered from Larry Tisch, his ownership of the company.
Right.
And now it's just, I don't know, it's just there.
Well, and you worked on...
There's nothing special about it anymore.
Yeah, you worked on 60 Minutes, Alan, and that was both a blessing, and in some ways we can now see it as a curse, because it was the first news program that really made a lot of money. It scored big in the ratings, and 60 Minutes became a source of revenue for CBS.
Yeah.
And when the tobacco guy, Larry Tisch, took over, he said, wow, let's make some money on news, and the inverse of that was, let's make news pay for itself.
Yeah, there's no question that was true. And there was 1 year, in fact, where 60 Minutes, one program, accounted for almost all of the net profits of CBS Incorporated. They got the idea in their head that they didn't fundamentally understand the purpose of the news division. And now they have a guy there named Les Moonves who, when he took over, said, I can fix anything. You can fix entertainment, you can fix news just as easily. Well, it's really not the same thing, but I don't think Moonves will ever understand it. But I think we're all the worse off for it, but, you know, life goes on.
Alan Weissman, you wrote a book about Dan Rather called Lone Star, The Extraordinary Life and Times of Dan Rather. What do you make of his recent lawsuit and his version of the way he exited CBS?
Well, Cronkite used to have a saying, he never said something was somebody was making a fool of himself. He'd always say, making a damn fool of yourself. And I think Dan's making a fool of himself with this lawsuit. I have a hunch, I don't know this for a fact, but I think that it was triggered by the Don Imus settlement with Viacom. Mm. I think that sort of put the bee in somebody's bonnet, but they're totally different circumstances. Rather was paid the full money that he was owed for the contract. He was kept on as stipulated in the contract. He now claims that the contract implied that he be put on the air. And it didn't, my knowledge of it anyway, didn't say anything at all like that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is he took the money, you know, and now he's saying that he was made the fall guy or the scapegoat. I mean, I was at 60 Minutes, too, when that whole thing went down, and that's not the way that I saw it at all.
Hmm. Well, as an outsider, Alan, my take on it was that there were some slip-ups in the reporting there, but that the supporters of the president seized on a very minor issue, you know, the font in that memo, and used it to derail the whole investigation. And it was used to offer the American public that there was nothing there about Bush's AWOL status from the Texas Air National Guard.
Most reasonable, knowledgeable people knew that that story was true from day one. And really and truly, it was first broken by the New York Times in 1999. You could look it up. They did the first interview with the lieutenant governor of Texas, who admitted making the phone call to get George W. Bush into the National Guard. Mm-hmm. This was not a new story, okay? And the reason I believe that Al Gore didn't use it in the 2000 election was I think he was afraid that people would start looking into how he got such a cushy gig in Vietnam as a photographer who didn't come anywhere near close to seeing any action.
Mm-hmm.
Lloyd Benson's son got free of the draft. I mean, this is what went on then,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was you were laying the whole reputation of the news division on the line over a story that most people knew was true anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think it had any effect on the 2004 election, even if the documents had been 100% bona fide genuine.
Yeah.
I think John Kerry would have still lost because, in my view, he ran a lousy campaign.
Well, I can't disagree with that. We're talking with Alan Weissman, former CBS News producer. He's just published a powerful new book about Richard Pearl. It's called Prince of Darkness. Right away, you got my attention because instead of, those blurbs from your friends about how great you are, you used what we call pull quotes. You lifted quotes from some of the key players, and they're not all very nice about Richard Pearl. According to Richard Burt, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State, Richard Pearl can take a really bad idea and make it sound almost plausible and reasonable, even brilliant. Or Brent Scowcroft, I really don't understand Pearl. If you talk about the two real neocons, there's Pearl and Wolfowitz, and they're very different. Paul Wolfowitz is an idealist, but he's prepared to impose democracy by the sword. Pearl's not about that. I don't think Pearl gives an S about democracy. Fundamentally, it's all a means to an end. So right away, you set us up for a critical look at Richard Pearl, and you really delivered, Alan. I was hoping to skim through your book in about 20 minutes, and I read the whole damn thing.
Well, thank you. The only thing that I promised Pearl, and it was the same thing that I said to Dan Rather, who refused to cooperate in any way with the writing of The Lone Star, was I only promised I'm going to be fair. That's it. I said to Pearl, I don't do Kitty Kelly, but I don't write Valentine's either. There's nothing in this for you. If you're gonna give me your time, and that's all I'm asking for, I'm not asking for your authorization or your blessing, and I wouldn't accept it even if you offered it. If you're willing to waltz with me, it's your risk, you know. And he agreed to do it, and I believe I've written a fair book.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've pointed out some things that he did that I believe are honorable and commendable. And I've also pointed out other things that, have put him in a very bad light. So I think I've been fair to Richard Pearl. I don't know what he thinks of the book. He hasn't spoken to me. The book has only been out a week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he feels about it, but I'm confident that at least I was fair.
Well, Alan, one of the things that intrigued me about the early development of Richard Pearl that is similar to Karl Rove, and actually I share some of it, is I was a high school debater.
And oh, what are you?
It really schooled me for what I do today. My father made me try out for the debate team, and I am forever grateful for that. But it's interesting because most of my friends who were high school debaters are liberals like me. And it's amazing to see people like Rove and Pearl who took those skills and really never let up. Their whole lives are basically devoted to winning the next debate.
Well, here's an interesting little tidbit that I really meant to put in the book, but I don't know, my editor didn't think it was that important. But during the time that Pearl was a high school debater in Los Angeles, do you know who won the state championship that year?
No, I don't.
Bob Schrum.
Oh, wow.
I'm not kidding. Bob Schrum won it.
He's been losing ever since.
Yeah, I know that. Debating was a very big deal, apparently, in Southern California and I guess elsewhere in the country.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very, very large part of Pearl's background. He loved what he called the elegant elegant, bulletproof argument. He loved mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And that's what attracted him to Albert Wolfstetter, the guy from the RAND Corporation who wrote about missile defenses and how we ought to array our forces and all this. And he was only 17, you know, but Pearl was only 17 years old.
Yeah.
And he got into this rather arcane bit of business, but debating was, that was a big deal to him, and it still is today.
And then fast forward a few years, he joins the staff of Henry Scoop Jackson, an amazing senator from Washington State.
He sure was.
And there he met Wolfowitz and
yeah.
Feith and many of the other characters who populate Bush 1 and now Bush 2 and the debacle in Iraq.
It all started in Scoop's office. It really did. The whole movement came out of Scoop. I mean, you go down the list, it's astonishing. I mean, Elliot Abrams came out of there, Frank Gaffney, Michael Ledeen. All of these guys came through that whole Scoop Jackson bit of business. And Jackson was a liberal on a lot of social issues, but he was the hardest of hardliners when it came to dealing with the Soviet Union.
Right. A cold warrior with capital letters.
He was Pearl's real father. I mean, he was his father in many ways. Taught him how to balance his checkbook, how to pay a parking ticket, what shoes to buy. It was quite a relationship. I mean, mm-hmm. it was a very powerful thing. And he turned a staff job. I mean, all he was for Scoop was a staffer. But he turned it into something so powerful that even Henry Kissinger, at the height of Kissinger's powers, wrote in his own book, I'd wake up every morning worried about what Richard Pearl was going to do.
Now, let's jump forward to his relationship with Ahmed Chalabi.
Yeah.
He, of course, was a guy that repeatedly Pearl said, well, let's just give him the keys to Iraq. You know, let's help him form a government in exile and then just move in there. And I love the phrase that Cheney always uses about standing up a government, kind of like a movie set. but that's really what he had in mind. Explain the complex relationship between Richard Pearl and Chalabi.
Pearl, the people who became idols and icons to Pearl were people like Andrei Sakharov, people like Lech Walesa, people like Nelson Mandela and Sharansky. He had this great passion for dissidents who, if given the proper support, okay, can cause regime change and rally the people. This was the template that he saw in Eastern Europe and with Mandela in South Africa. And what he began thinking, and this was back in the 80s really, was, you know, maybe we can take this template and transport it to another region like the Middle East. And if we can find a guy like a Sakharov or a Lech Walesa, that's how we can get rid of this Saddam Hussein, all right? But the guy he picked was a guy with, one wag referred to him as the Jay Gatsby of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who was an exile from a wealthy family who spent most of his life partying in Paris and London and globetrotting. And
in Jordan, he was the Charlie Keating.
Yes, he was indicted and convicted in absentia for bank fraud, sentenced to 22 years in prison. He claims it was a frame-up, and Pearl says it's a frame-up, but he chose this fellow who had a really, really checkered background, and that's being kind, and insisted that he had support among Iraqi people. Well, mm-hmm. when the Saddam Hussein regime was overthrown and the Iraqis finally got a chance to actually vote, and they got their, you know, blue fingers and all this, Chalabi's party didn't win a single seat.
Yeah, we got to take a break, Alan. We'll continue in just a moment. Alan Weissman has penned this powerful new book about Richard Pearl. It's called Prince of Darkness, and I picked it up and put it down when I finished it. We'll take a break and return. You got a question or comment? Bring it on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, and you'll be greeted as a liberator. That's 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
Like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA.
Ha!
Sam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree. We have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas, and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah. Christmas is fun. I mean, we start the kickoff with the, for the season, the first weekend in November with an open house, and we have homemade refreshments. In December, we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626, and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes. Schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1, heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
Welcome to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your Solar Future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
On August 28, Todd Endress was almost eaten alive by an 18-foot great white while surfing on Monterey Bay. A pod of 15 dolphins formed a wall between Todd and the shark, otherwise he would have died. ISARF, the International Shark Attack Research Fund, is a nonprofit foundation spearheaded by Todd to find ways to keep surfers, swimmers, and divers safe in our oceans without harming the shark. If you'd like to help, please go to ISARF.org to make your tax-deductible donation. That's ISARF.org.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger.
Richard Pearl actually agrees with us now.
Round up to no good, broke the old treaties cause he could. Struts all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
We continue now with Alan Weissman, a former CBS News producer, author of the new book about Richard Pearl called Prince of Darkness. And you cleared up some misconceptions for me in the book. One is that while Richard Pearl is friendly with many of the people who were part of the Project for a New American Century, he never actually signed off on their blueprint for action to remake the Middle East. Was that a matter of deniability, or did he actually not fully support it, or was he not asked? How did that play out, Alan?
You know, that's a very strange thing. When I discovered he hadn't signed it, of course I asked him. And he said, well, I don't know, I might have been out of town, maybe somebody didn't get to me in time. That whole episode is rather vague. Now, he did sign subsequent documents that PNAC put out, but he did not sign the original one, and I don't really know what the explanation for it is. I can't believe that they couldn't get to him, because they always know where Pearl is, and he travels the world constantly, but I don't know why he didn't sign the original one.
Now, he seems ambivalent, too, about taking credit for the things that people are so willing to generously credit him for, like architect of the invasion of Iraq.
Well, you know, it's funny, because the only interview that Paul Wolfowitz has given since his scandal at the World Bank, as far as I know, the only interview was on Charlie Rose Show. And Wolfowitz said, look, I wasn't the architect of anything, so people should stop calling me that. Well, of course, Pearl says the exact same thing, which leads one to wonder if the war produced itself. Because obviously no one wants to claim responsibility, but in all fairness and honesty, Richard Pearl had been agitating for this regime change at least 10 years before 9/11. I mean, 9/11 really had nothing to do with it as far as he was concerned. He saw an opportunity once the Soviet Union began to fall apart for a what they call a unipolar moment. This was going to be our time. This was the time for the United States to start acting like the world's only superpower. And this was the vision. This was what he had in mind.
You write in the book, just weeks before the start of shock and awe in Iraq, Pearl received a strange call from his protege, Michael Maloof, suggesting he meet with a Lebanese-American businessman named Imad Haghi. Jumping to the next page, the next thing Pearl knew, Haghi was on the phone again, this time explaining he'd been to Baghdad, had an urgent message from Intelligence Chief Habush. Pearl said he was not about to jump on a plane to Beirut or anywhere else, but he met this man in London. And this was apparently a guy who was carrying a message from Saddam Hussein saying, don't attack us, we'll give you oil, and, you know, we'll agree to almost anything. Was there an effort by Saddam to communicate with the United States prior to our invasion, saying that he essentially was willing to surrender?
Yes, that's an absolute bona fide offer, and basically, Saddam, through his intelligence chief and this Lebanese businessman, was saying, look, we'll allow all the inspectors you want. You can go anywhere you want. We don't have anything. The only thing that I won't give you is I'm not going to resign. Okay? Why they contacted Pearl, I don't know. But Pearl immediately called the only friend he had at the CIA, because Pearl and the CIA have never gotten along. And he passed along this request, and the CIA, his friend, checked it out and called back and said, tell this guy we'll meet him in Baghdad, meaning it's too late now.
Yeah.
The show is going to go on.
And you get him late in the book to acknowledge the failures. He ultimately does break ranks, and while he's not a crony of Bush's and apparently hasn't even met with the president since he took office, he does break ranks and start to criticize. But as you close the book, I don't get any sense of him accepting any responsibility. He seems to be one of those people who can advance lots of ideas, but then when they fail, it's always somebody else's fault.
You know, I kept probing and probing, especially the last meeting that we had, which was at his home in Provence. I kept trying to get a sense from him that, you know what, I'm partly to blame for this, but he wouldn't nudge in that direction. In fact, he kind of astonished me when he said, look, I still think that there is a connection between Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and 9/11. And I said, what are you referring to? And he said, the Mohammed Atta meeting in Prague. And
I said,
you know, Mr. Pearl, that's been pretty much debunked. And he said, well, no, my information is there wasn't just one meeting, there were four meetings. And I said, well, if that's the case, why doesn't the administration put that out?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, there are national security concerns and this, that, and the other thing. A pretty weak comeback for a man who's an outstanding debater.
Yeah.
I mean, he knew that the response was pretty weak. As for Bush 43, he tries to say nice things about him, but it's absolutely clear to me that he doesn't think much of this president's intelligence. In fact, he told me, and I confirmed it later on, that he once informed the president that Germany is in fact a member of NATO and has been since the beginning. No, I'm not. This is true.
Is that like Ford in Poland?
Well, no, it's actually worse, because I sort of understood what Jerry Ford was getting at.
Or Reagan in South America. There are different countries down there, Mr. President.
Yeah, but the president was not aware that Germany was a member of NATO. And
Alan, I'm sorry the clock has run here. I really appreciate you joining us. A real pleasure to talk with you. It's a great book about Richard Perle. One of the other things you debunk is that while he's tried to wheel and deal and make a lot of money with his connections, he's not actually succeeded at that.
That's true.
The book is Prince of Darkness. We've been talking with writer Alan Weissman, former CBS News producer. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we're going to talk with a woman who's written a memoir about the Iranian hostage crisis back in 1979. We'll find out how it connects to the present on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hemp, the superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp. Used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp. This God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments. Loaded with potassium, magnesium, calcium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and nutrients not available in other plants. Hemp can be stored with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Could this be the government's best-kept secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The big oil spill might lead to criminal charges.
Just as the oil keeps spreading in San Francisco Bay, so do the questions about exactly what happened.
Thanksgiving air travel will require time and patience.
Since one in four flights are ending up delayed now, don't count on an on-time performance.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. 58,000 gallons of goo spilled from a cargo ship when it struck the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. CBS News correspondent John Blackstone reports less than one quarter of the oil has been recovered.
Environmentalists worry that the longer this goes on, the worse it gets. As the oil remains in the water, there's more time for it to sink into the bay, to be ingested by birds and animals, fish in the water here. The San Francisco Bay is a very rich area, so that the longer that there are these oil slicks floating in the bay, the more chance there is for marine mammals, the many birds here, fish to come in contact.
Federal prosecutors are looking into the possibility of criminal charges against members of the crew. They're being questioned. The Coast Guard says there were problems of management and communication on the ship's bridge at the time of the accident. A lawyer for the pilot, Captain John Cota, says Cota could hardly feel anything and initially believed that the impact with the Bay Bridge was minor. Now this.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. You expect outstanding performance from your office staff. Shouldn't you expect the same from your office furniture? The Hahn Company is the market leader in providing flexible office furnishings that deliver durability, comfort, and improved workplace performance. Every Hahn product is backed by a limited lifetime warranty and built to withstand the rigors of everyday use year after year. Hahn, smart now, smarter later. For a free catalog or more information, visit gethahn.com. That's gethon.com. I'll see you on the Osgood File.
I just peeked in your medicine cabinet.
Excuse me?
Yeah, wow.
I can explain.
Do you explain all those different pain relievers?
Oh, that. Well, I have one for headaches. I got another one when I hurt my back.
Stop. It's time to go all Advil. Advil is the every pain reliever.
Isn't there
something that's stronger or lasts longer? No.
So it'll work when my legs are sore from chasing down snoopers.
I suppose. Shouldn't you be all Advil?
Compared to OTC pain relievers, use as directed.
Rising airfares, it seems, have not discouraged those who want to be home for the holidays. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
The airlines say the Thanksgiving crunch starts this Friday, and James May, head of the Air Transport Association, says it will be crowded.
We anticipate that during that 12 days, we're going to see some 27 million passengers.
travel on our carriers.
That's up 4% from a year ago, and airlines expect planes to be 90% full. May says airlines are taking steps to handle the flow and reduce delays, though the weather's always a wild card. David Stempler heads the Air Travelers Association, says passengers should allow plenty of extra time.
Just allow for long lines at baggage check-in at the security checkpoint.
And bring plenty of patience. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Washington.
Insurgent violence in Iraq continues to decline. In October, the U.S. military says the number of rocket and mortar attacks was at a 21-month low. Retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland, a CBS News military consultant, credits the surge.
When you put in 30,000 additional American troops, you would hope to see a higher level of security. And during that period of time, of course, you've also seen an improvement and expansion in Iraqi security forces, both the Army and police.
Iraqi officials say a private security guard protecting a U.S. vehicle convoy in Baghdad killed a civilian taxi driver who got too close. Dyncor, a security contractor based in Falls Church, Virginia, says one of its teams opened fire to disable a vehicle but did not believe anyone was injured. In Pakistan, opposition leader Benazir Bhutto and her supporters plan a march tomorrow to protest President Pervez Musharraf's emergency rule. But once again, Bhutto has been placed under house arrest, this time for a week. An aide says the detention order is not binding and she'll try to lead the march anyway. But the last time, Bhutto's house was surrounded by police and barbed wire. TV and movie director Delbert Mann has died. His 1955 film version of Marty won 4 Academy Awards, including Best Actor for Ernest Borgnine, who played a 34-year-old Brooklyn butcher who'd given up on finding love.
Oh, Marty, put on the blue suit, huh?
Blue suit, gray suit. I'm just a fat little man, a fat, ugly man.
You're not ugly.
I'm ugly, I'm ugly, I'm ugly.
Marty!
Ma, leave me alone!
Borgnine told us today that Mann was a brilliant, subtle director.
He brought it out of you. You thought you were giving the performance. And actually, when you went home at the end of the day, you said, boy, did I give a good performance, little realizing that it was him that got it out of you.
Delbert Mann was 87. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Reason number 17 to switch to Geico. This is just your way of saying hi. If you love motorcycles, you need to call Geico, because now Geico offers insurance on all the stuff that moves you, including motorcycles. Great rates, great coverage, and personal service 24/7. Call anytime, 1-800-44-CYCLE, or visit geico.com.
You know, a wise man once said, success is easy. Do the right thing the right way at the right time. Simple, right? Of course, small business owners will tell you that finding time is what makes it tough. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted at millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/small business. Business takes...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, 6 minutes into it. And today is the official holiday observance of Veterans Day. We're going to pay tribute to veterans past and present. A little bit later this hour, Jeff Millard will join us. He served in Iraq. He's co-founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War. And he's now a journalist with truthout.org. Joining me now is Dr. Deborah Johaniak. She's published a new book called Behind the Veil.
Ready, steady, go!
An American woman's memoir of the 1979 Iran hostage crisis. She married an Iranian, had a couple of young children, and went to Iran just in time to be there as our embassy was seized in 1979, leading to the hostage crisis that led to the end of Jimmy Carter's presidency. And if you believe the October surprise rumors, it was used maliciously by Reagan and his cronies to help them get elected and to help defeat Jimmy Carter at that time. Welcome to our program, Dr. Johanyak.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
I want to start off with a passage here in your book and then share just a couple of personal stories, and then you can share some of your personal stories.
Right.
You write about driving by the regal residence of the country's ruler, the Shah of Iran. And you go on to say that in the metropolis of Tehran were tiny alleys and multi-lane highways. Complacent donkeys trotted in the wake of roaring Camaros. Photos of the Shah adorned windows and doorways of many shops and stores, but Western influences were everywhere as well. Neon signs invited hungry shoppers to dine on pizza and burgers, while traditional eateries offered the famous shalu kebab or the popular koroshed sabzi, a stew made with greens like spinach and dill to which beans and chunks of meat are added. Iran was a land of contrast. Discos and nightclubs operated discreetly, but I saw no all-night bars or the common drug use that was prevalent in the States. Women typically didn't go out alone. Rather, families escorted them, or they ventured out in pairs or groups to appear in public without a companion. Might betoken a woman of loose morals, as I would later learn to my chagrin. Western women used to freedom, sometimes shopped alone, but I didn't hear of any dangerous incidents then. Foreigners were common in Iran at that time, and during our shopping trips, I saw blonde, brown, or mahogany heads in the downtown streets. Shopkeepers were friendly and helpful, and many knew a little English. Evidence of progress was everywhere, and I'll stop there. Now, today is Veterans Day. My father was a veteran who fought in World War II, and one of his assignments was to run supply trains that went from Persian Gulf ports all the way into Russia, then became the Soviet Union. And he was injured in an accident and sent to Switzerland to recover. And at that time, somehow, I don't know the whole story, he met the Shah, who was in exile in Switzerland at that time. And later on, he went during the Johnson administration on a U.S. State Department trade program to Tehran, where he was invited to set up a business. My dad was a soft drink bottler, and the deal was that in order to do business, you had to take the Shah as your partner. And he returned from that trip, and he said, you know, I ran for the airport as fast as I could. He said the idea of, you know, conducting business there and having the Shah as a partner, he said, you know, I thought of Savak, and I thought of the brutal repression that the Shah visited on his political opponents. So that's my little story. I'd like to hear yours now of how you navigated the situation in Iran and how things got more complicated when those radical students took over the U.S. Embassy.
Well, the story that you're telling about your dad lines up with several that I also heard about the Shah's regime. And in fact, my husband and I and the children were there in 1977 under the Shah's regime. And what you just read from the book actually describes my first impressions. It could be dangerous doing business with the government or disagreeing with the Shah because of Savak, which was cited on numerous instances by Amnesty International for violations of human rights. And that was one of the main reasons, I think, that various factional groups within Iran, the nationalists, the clerics, and so on, eventually rose up against that regime and ousted the Shah permanently in 1979, and that paved the way for Khomeini to come back on February 1st of 1979. So after my husband and I had returned, it was in late 1977, I had become ill and had emergency surgery, which I mentioned in the book, and got a little bit, you know, thrown off track. Like, what if something did happen to me, or what if this illness I have, which the doctors there, including a British doctor, described as kind of rare, what if it recurred or became fatal? So I came back to the States for a while and with the children. Eventually, my husband followed, and then when things turned out okay and I got a good report from a doctor here as well, we decided to go back in 1979, and we returned then to the Ayatollah's regime. It was at that point, though, that we began to notice some differences within the country. Things actually carried on pretty much as usual for us in our day-to-day activities. I was a graduate student who taught and took master's level classes at the University of Shiraz, and my husband managed a road construction company, so he was frequently out of town, and we lived with his family, who were just enormously supportive and welcoming to us. So I will always be grateful to them for that. Really, to most people I met in Iran, they were very, very kind and welcoming to us. But we began to feel more tensions and hear rumors against the West, particularly the U.S. government. But what struck me then and remains with me now is that the people that did complain about what the United States and certain European governments had done in Iran in the past to meddle with a natural form of democracy emerging, for example, 1953, people kind of differentiated between their gripes against the U.S. government and the American people. They always spoke highly of the American people. They had respect for them, but they were, you know, kind of fed up with the U.S. government. And over here I hear things like Iran should be blown off the map or it's a nation of terrorists, and I would like to see our country become better informed about Iran's history and its people and its culture so that we can learn to differentiate too.
Oh, we can't do that. I mean, you want us to have context. You want us to study history. You want us to understand the multidimensional aspects of a culture that's been there for thousands of years?
That would be my hope.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I wrote my book. I began it actually as just a record of events for my children because I wanted them to remember we had been there during this historic time and we had met many different people at all different places in society and heard, you know, various opinions and had a great number of intriguing experiences, I think, sandstorm and rats and village wedding and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted them to remember that.
Yeah.
Later on, I decided to kind of write it into a full-blown book, and I thought other people might benefit from hearing some of the stuff about the culture and people, too.
And do you find Americans are open-minded, or do they kind of match the cynical comments I made a moment ago?
Well, hope springs eternal.
You're an optimist, aren't you?
I really try.
Well, tell us what the greatest contrast was for you between those two trips, those two stays in Iran.
Because I was at the university, I think I felt the contrast less than other people might have in other parts of society, but universities tend to be more open and freedom-oriented and individualistic than other places. But I began to notice there was more emphasis to, for women especially, to dress modestly. There was a slogan or saying spray-painted in red on an orchard wall by our home that translated said, women who don't wear the chador, which is the veil, are harlots. Okay, they used a stronger word. And men who don't make them are pigs. And so I don't know who had put that up there and if it was for my benefit, if anybody knew I was a Westerner living there. There were a few other Westerners, but none in our neighborhood that I knew of. And then one time I got off a bus and three ladies in very heavy, dark chadors, and there's different kinds. Some women wear headscarves or light fabrics, and others wear the heavy ones that sort of look nun-like.
Mm-hmm.
But three ladies and the heavier ones said, you know, Mrs., why don't you go home and put on a veil? And I said, well, why? I meant this innocently, but I said, why should I? I'm not a Muslim. And they didn't say anything, but I began to see that I was really going against the grain of society. And I think I was just being American, being an individual, expecting people to accept me as I was, and not realizing that I was in a culture where that was considered a violation and really immodest, and perhaps even almost like thumbing my nose at an Ayatollah. So, you know, with a lot of thought and some very subtle and careful help from my in-laws, I learned to dress more Islamic-like, which still looked very Western, wearing long sleeves and longer skirts or, you know, slacks and all of that. And I adapted. But it took me a while to do that because I think I was just, you know, I just graduated from college. I was young. I'd been through the whole feminist spiel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taught to sort of put my interests ahead of other people's. And I had to learn to kind of do that, you know, take the other perspective, which in the Middle East, it's family first, community first over the individual.
Now, did you ever have to wear a burqa, or were you around women who felt the need to wear a burqa?
The burqa is more associated with Saudi Arabian women,
yeah,
for the most part. So, no, I didn't know anybody there, although here I've met a few people who do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. We're going to take a break and return. Dr. Deborah Johaniak is our guest. Her new book is called Behind the Veil, an American woman's memoir of the 79 Iran hostage crisis. It's out in softcover from the University of Akron Press. Check it out at your local independent bookstore. More in a moment. We've got some callers we'll go to. You can join in, too, at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Are you looking for that new dream home at a price that's not a dream? At Pacific Pride Homes, we really do take pride in the small number of custom homes we build every year and the fact that we can offer estate-quality homes without the estate price. We are now providing special financing and pricing on two of our beautiful new custom homes located in gated communities in North Monterey County. We invite you to visit us at PacificPrideHomes.com for details and directions.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Hi, everybody. It's Veterans Day, and let's give you a little traffic. And, of course, a big salute to all the vets who served our country. Looks like Santa Cruz Mountains. Great news here. No problems to report. And we're going to mention it anyways. Northbound and southbound, checking in with the really just no problems. Do have a problem in Salinas, Old Stage Road at Herbert. Solo vehicle went off the roadway and landed into a ditch. CHP is on scene. Santa Clara County, eastbound 156 before 152. Two vehicle crash, reportedly blocking lanes. CHP is actually on the way to the scene there. Traveling in the Felton area, we have a two-car crash. Lakeside Drive at Creek Drive. Also Gilroy, Bolza Road at Bloomfield. The railroad crossing arms are down. Apparently the crossing arms are stuck in a down position. There's no train in sight, so expect delays. And at Castroville, 156 at Castroville Boulevard, a big rig and a car on the right shoulder. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, we'll observe the official Veterans Day. About 10 minutes from now, Jeff Millard will join us from Iraq Veterans Against the War. We continue with Dr. Deborah Johaniak. Sorry, I'm working on that last name, Johaniak. And she is the author of Behind the Veil, an American woman's memoir of the 1979 Iran hostage crisis. And joining us from Sacramento, Matt is on the line. Welcome, Matt. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. My question for is, since I was in that generation that saw this go through, what do you think would have happened, knowing the people there, had America instead just apologized for putting the Shah in the first place? How would that have affected the people of the country if we tried to make friends?
Well, that's interesting. We should also mention that, of course, Jimmy Carter compounded the problems by permitting the Shah to come into the United States for medical care. We first sent him to an island off Panama, and that didn't work out so well. And so
that would have been like inviting Hitler, you know, for the people of that country.
Interesting point. Doctor?
Yes, I agree. Just knowing from what I've heard from people and a lot of conversations and dialogue at the universities there and some here, I believe that an apology would have gone a long way. You know, a formal apology, just getting issues out on the table, building towards healing. I think there's a lot that both countries can benefit from in each other, but it does take some recognition and, you know, acknowledgement of those past errors.
Well, maybe hopefully somebody will get smart enough to apologize now.
Well, I think they've made efforts, but it seems like one side will reach out and the other backs off, and then the other one reaches out and...
Well, no, but you're dealing with the radicals at the top on both sides. If the people themselves could reach out to each other, we could just say we're sorry. I think they'd accept it.
Well, Matt, keep in mind that we're having trouble apologizing or even observing the Armenian genocide from 75 years ago.
I appreciate her being on because I like to hear the perspective of somebody who was on the ground and normal.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Dave in Eureka joins us next. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. I've known a number of Iranian people, and I'm happy to say that all of them that I've known, really good people, intelligent, level-headed, and educated, all of whom have become American and Americanized and no longer held to all the obsessive dress codes that seem to be so terribly, terribly important in Iran. Is that being enforced on them, or is that something they really have their heart in, do you know?
It's my impression that there are several perspectives on dress in Iran and probably throughout the Middle East and even around the world as far as that goes. But part of it is culture. Women, even who are not Muslim, for example, Christians and Jews, may also cover their heads or dress modestly because it's just what they're used to after, you know, centuries of that type of cultural orientation. Another thing is the Islamic government, Islamic regime, because it enforces its interpretation of the Quran, which the Quran simply says that women and men should dress modestly. So that's interpreted in various ways across the Muslim countries today. But the Revolutionary Guards, and there's a Council of Guardians that have taken it upon themselves to interpret this, and then they impose those interpretations by law with fines and punishments. And that tends to get stringent and lax by turns.
Thank you so much.
All right, Dave, thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, tell us what your impressions are based on, you know, your visits there in the 1970s about the situation today and the way the Bush administration, far from apologizing for installing the Shah and supporting him at the time of the revolution, we are doubling down on bad policies from the last 20, 30 years. And I'm just curious what your perception is and if you fear that the U.S. will launch a military assault against Iran.
Well, I am a little concerned about that, especially this past year, last couple years, I guess. And I'm disappointed because I believe that there's so much we can do in order to...
Ooh. Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I'll take care of that. Go right ahead.
All right. I'm just disappointed in the way that things have played out the last year or two, and I'm hoping that in the future both countries will find a way to send the right representatives to the table to discuss past issues and current opportunities and bridge some of the differences that have arisen over the past generation or so and then work toward a positive future. One example of that actually beginning to happen is through the American-Iran Council in Princeton, New Jersey, who works with higher-level government figures in this country, like Madeleine Albright and Sergeant Shriver, and I think at least one former hostage from 1979. in setting up events, programs, sponsoring speakers and so on, in order to promote understanding, just like I'm trying to do, and get both countries to work together to look past these differences and problems and start, you know, building in a positive way so we can have a really dynamic partnership.
Yeah. Well, and unfortunately, the language coming out of Washington is focused on demonizing individuals, on trying to make this incredible stretch that people who serve in the military there are terrorists for the purposes of provoking some sort of a confrontation. And I'm just very sorry to see the way it's rolling out. And based on past experiences, we can't trust these people to be rational and reasonable once they get into heat like this.
Yes, once the language turns in this negative direction, it gets hard sometimes to apply restraint. My understanding is that, and my understanding is limited and simple, so I would not be the ultimate expert on this issue of current politics and terrorism, but, for example, the Iran's connection with Hezbollah is that Hezbollah is a multifaceted organization. I believe it's based in southern Lebanon, and it provides a number of services throughout the region to people of various countries, displacing people or finding homes for displaced people due to wars. And
sorry, we're out of time, Dr. Deborah Johanniak. The book is Behind the Veil here on the Peter B. Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
What would Jesus sell? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. In Washington State, if a woman wanted the Plan B contraceptive, pharmacists were basically required to dispense it until last week when a federal judge threw out that rule, saying it was unfair to pharmacists with moral objections to Plan B because it forced them either to dispense a drug that they believe ends a life or quit the business. Whether Plan B does in fact end a life doesn't matter. Under this ruling, it's the pharmacist's belief that matters. So who's right? This listener argues that in the case of a pharmacist who owns his business, the government has no right to tell him what to carry.
If the business owner decides he doesn't want to carry a certain kind of something, why should I be able to go to him and demand that he carry what I want?
He's got a point. Can the government tell you to do something that goes against your beliefs, however you happen to arrive at those beliefs? For pharmacists, of course, it's only going to get tougher as more and more drugs are created with stem cells. But beyond the drugstore, moral dilemmas for business owners abound. Should an ice cream shop serve a fat person to be complicit in gluttony? Can the government force them to? If an environmentally conscious gas station owner starts refusing to fill cars getting less than 20 miles a gallon for fear of spoiling God's creation, can the government force him? And if a landlord's religion teaches that he faces damnation for renting to an unmarried couple or to people who treat their pets a little too much like children? Yikes! I wonder if we're really ready for an economy driven by something other than money. Now this.
Are you thinking about buying one of those inexpensive memory foam mattresses? Think again. Tempur-Pedic is the only mattress made from authentic Tempur material. The one that shapes and contours to your body, guaranteeing a restful, rejuvenating night's sleep. Those knockoffs don't even come close. Call Tempur-Pedic today at 1-800-805-3495, and they'll send you a free video, a sample of the proprietary Tempur material, and a 90-day trial certificate. You won't get that from those other guys. Tempur-Pedic is the real deal. Call 1-800-805-3495.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
As we observe the official Veterans Day of 2007, we salute our veterans.
Those who start wars, never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them. Those who write laws, they can recite them. And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, it's time.
Oh yeah, it's time.
It's time to go home. Take our boys away, no. Take our girls away.
In observance of Veterans Day, I'd like to thank all of you who put the uniform on and served our nation at wartime, in peacetime, or in both situations. We owe you a deep debt of gratitude, and in my view, it's insulting to see chicken hawks like Bush and Cheney preside over these ceremonies on Veterans Day that really have no depth. And no sincerity, in my view. Jeff Millard joins us now. That's Sergeant Jeff Millard of the National Guard of New York State. He served in Iraq, and he is one of the founders and the D.C. chapter president of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Peter. Although I'm not a founder of IVAW.
Okay.
They were founded, actually, before I went to Iraq.
Okay.
Before I went to Iraq.
Then I sit corrected, and thank you for that. Also, I know Jeff as a powerful journalist who shoots videos and writes articles at truthout.org, and you've done a lot of great work over the last couple of years, Jeff.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Peter.
Now, for a moment, tell us about your service in Iraq and link it to the activist work that you do now.
Well, I think that the biggest link between my service in the military overall and what I do today is the reasons why I did it. I went to Iraq, even though I disagreed with the war, largely because I didn't know about my options in life. I had no context of GI resistance. I disagreed with the war before I went, and I thought about going to Canada, but I didn't know about the War Resister Support Campaign. I didn't have Patrick Hart. When I thought about going to jail as a second option, I had no context of GI resistance. I didn't know about Camilo Mejia. I didn't have a Lieutenant Watada to look up to in refusing legal order to deploy. And so I went to Iraq with the understanding of that's just what soldiers do. And it's a shame because we do have a long history of GI resistance in this country. We do have a long history of resisting a war, especially wars that are bad for America and bad for the military, which many that this country has gotten into have been bad for America. And if I'd have known about the GI resistance during the Vietnam era, things could have changed very drastically. But what really connects it is that when I signed up for the military in 1998, I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I never really got to do that in uniform. I took an oath to do that, but very rarely did I actually have the opportunity to do that. Today, every time I get to put on an Iraq Veterans Against the War t-shirt and I get to use my First Amendment rights, I make sure that I am protecting and defending that Constitution. And I think that it is with the utmost patriotism and love of this country that I make sure that we put this country back on the path that it should be instead of the path that it's on.
Yeah.
That's where I approach what I do.
Well, I really appreciate that, Jeff, because I do believe that if everyone had your same commitment to our Constitution and its values, that we'd be in a far different place today.
Oh, I thank you for that. And I just think that those of us who have done this and those who came before me, my screensaver on my computer right now is of one of my mentors, Dave Klein, who passed away recently. And when I think of my oath, I just remember him talking about the fact that he took that oath before Vietnam and he carried it with him to the day he died, which was just a couple months ago, in a way that I've never seen anyone. And so I have some pretty big shoes to fill when it comes to veterans who've come before me and who oppose war and occupation.
Now, you were part of the 42nd IDROC, and you served at least 13 months in Iraq. Are some of your fellow troops still there?
Some of them are back there now. Some of my friends are back there now. And some of the friends that I've made through Iraq Veterans Against the War are now in Iraq. We have a chapter at Fort Drum, New York, with the 10th Mountain Division. And some of the people that I met there, some of the friends I've had there, are now back in Iraq. And so it's a tough thing to know that every day when I get up and I check the number of U.S. dead in Iraq, I'm not just checking a number, but I'm looking for names.
Yeah.
Because they're my friends, and they're the people that's why I do this, is because it's, to me, very personal, not just abstract to me. It's extremely personal.
Sergeant Jeff Millard with us from Iraq Veterans Against the War. You've also seen his work at truthout.org. And I want to put out a request here for veterans who changed their minds or maybe who, like Jeff, opposed a war when you went to serve in it. And if you'd like to share your thoughts about Vietnam, about Korea, or even perhaps about World War II, I invite you to call and talk with us here this half hour. Lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-573-8372. We go to Carmel by the Sea, where Paul is on the line. Hello, Paul.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Well, it's a great day to remember, and yesterday we had some great services down here in Carmel honoring our veterans. But one of the things that I kind of wanted to talk about was you had mentioned earlier that you were a veteran of a war. You were a male descendant of a wartime veteran.
That's right. My father was in uniform in World War II.
Well, you know, it's a great organization that the American Legion has. It's the Sons of the American Legion, and it's a way for us to be able to honor our father's service. But one of the things that we talked about yesterday that also gets forgotten is the 1.2 million women veterans who have served, and making sure that the VA also takes care of them. You know, they've kind of suffered a little bit different than some of the men. They've been subject to domestic violence and abuse and sexual assault, as well as the VA needs to really kind of do more treatment in the ways of breast cancer and cervical cancer. And those are some of the things that we're trying to make sure that our veterans get these medical things taken care of.
Well, Paul, I'm really glad you pointed that out, because it's interesting. Until really this deployment, we've always just talked about the fighting men, the brave men. And political correctness takes hold here, and accuracy, too, as some people struggle to, correct old habits to include women. But you're correct to point out that while women weren't permitted to join in combat duty until recently, that women have served in our military with great honor and provided great contributions, and too often that is overlooked.
Oh, no, they've also, you know, interesting enough, I mean, you know, whether it be the common things like, you know, nurses and support. But, you know, now that we've got them in, you know, as drivers, and we have them, you know, in the combat zone, and we have them, you know, flying our planes, and we have them commanders on ships, You know, the dynamic has changed quite significantly. And you know what? Hoorah for them. I mean, you know, if those women want to step forward and to advance their careers and be treated as an equal, you know what? I honor their service even more so, because I know that for some of them out there, it tends to be even more difficult being in a man's game, if you wish. But they still honor they still serve an honorable service to our country in all dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be in the dental labs or it be in the dentistry field, where I don't know if you're aware, but you can't go out into the field and you can't go out in any type of overseas deployment unless you've gone through the dental corps. So those are the kinds of things that are absolutely crucial to the mission that we have to get accomplished.
Paul, thank you very much. I appreciate your call today.
Enjoy.
Nice to talk with you. 888-5 Peter B. If you'd like to join us here in observing Veterans Day on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, Jeff, I recall vividly an article or a series of stories that you wrote about women serving in Iraq, and this had to do with the seamy side of co-ed combat, if you will. And I cannot remember the soldier's name, but you wrote some stories about how she was subject to command rape, and when she refused to redeploy, she was then subject to a court-martial.
That's Suzanne Swift.
Thank you.
Swift.
Yeah.
Suzanne, I originally heard about Suzanne on a radio show, and I just said, well, this can't happen. And I was a non-commissioned officer, and for me to... The greatest joy of my job was that I was a leader of soldiers, and to hear stories about command rape, which is the exact opposite of that. It's using your authority to get sexual favor from someone who does not want to have sex with you, to me is the most revolting thing that I could ever possibly think of. And for Suzanne to have gone through that for a year with the additional pressures of combat, to me is someone that really was reaching out very strongly for help and not having many reach back. It's interesting that your previous caller brings up the American Legion, which to me, I'll never belong to the American Legion or the Veterans of Foreign Wars or any other organization outside of Iraq Veterans Against the War, because I don't see these organizations stepping up to the plate and helping Iraq best. I see these organizations getting in the way of helping Iraq best. They've worked against us on things like depleted uranium. They've worked against us on traumatic brain injury. They've worked against us on making sure that female veterans get recognized for military sexual violence, and that the predators of military sexual violence get punished to the fullest extent of both military and civilian law. And the fact is that IVAW is one of the few organizations out there that's working on behalf of all of these issues and on behalf of Iraq veterans, truly, because we are Iraq veterans, because our organization isn't lobbyists. We are not, we're not suits and ties. We're not generals. I think the highest ranking member of our organization might be a lieutenant colonel. For the most part, we're lower enlisted men and women who've decided to step up and make sure that we take care of each other and that we bring this war to an end. And so it's interesting when I hear other groups like the American Legion brought into this conversation, because quite frankly, on Veterans Day above any other, I feel disregarded. And I was sitting around last night, which was last night, the official Veterans Day, it's the 11th of the month.
Right.
And I was sitting down with a book and just flipping through some old books of mine, looking at some Frederick Douglass, and I came across a speech that Frederick Douglass gave in 1852 called What to the Slaves is the 4th of July, and I couldn't help but to reflect on what to the Iraq veteran is Veterans Day. And in that speech, Douglass said that the 4th of July, in regards to slavery, was a veil that would mask the crimes which would shame a nation of savages. And I have to say that when we talk about the treatment of our veterans, we don't need parades. We don't need yellow ribbon bumper stickers. We actually need systematic change that is going to help our veterans. There's no excuse for the fact that 1 in 4 homeless in this country are veterans. There's no excuse that there's a waiting line for PTSD. There's no excuse that we continue to create more and more veterans. We forget that the original meaning of the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918 was the end of World War I, the war to end all wars. It was Armistice Day. And I think that we need to start looking at a way to not create another generation of veterans while we still continue to care for the veterans that we have. If we can start to care for the veterans that we have.
And, Jeff, just in contrast to what you just described, the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 781 in the Eureka area, they're based in Ferndale, has decided to open their doors to returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan. And it reads here, I'm extending an invitation to our new veterans attending Humboldt State to join us this Tuesday at the Ferndale Veterans Hall. Free food and drink on us starting at 6:30 p.m. Park in the back of the building, it says. And so if you are a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan and you'd like to meet some of your brothers and sisters from previous wars, here's an open invitation for a free dinner. And that is Tuesday, tomorrow, at the Ferndale Veterans Hall, starting at 6:30 p.m. And you can contact Carl Young, who's president of that chapter. His website or his email is carlhandup@suddenlink.net. We're going to take a break and return with Jeff Millard. Want to talk about what appears to be a great legal break for Lieutenant Aaron Watata, who stood as a war resister and said, "I will not go to Iraq." We'll talk about that with Sergeant Jeff Millard as we continue in just a moment. You can also visit the website, Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW.org. More in a moment here on the PBC Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
We get to hear farther into space than anybody's ever heard before.
Are there other people out there in the universe?
That's a good question. What do you think, huh?
I don't know.
It's a good answer. Skeptic, huh? Well, the most important thing is that you all keep searching for your own answers. I'll tell you one thing about the universe, though. The universe is a pretty big place. It's bigger than anything anyone has ever dreamed of before. So if it's just us, it seems like an awful waste of space.
We are not alone. This is Bob Oliver. I have seen UFOs using night vision equipment. You can too. They are real just like you and me. Take the Quantum Leap Saturday morning, 11 a.m. on KRXA 540. That's 11 a.m. Saturday.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
All right, everybody, Veterans Day traffic. Let's take a look at the very latest. We're going to start off with a problem working right now. Let's see. Let's cruise right on over to Santa Clara County. 156 before 152, two vehicle crash reportedly blocking lanes. Felton, Lakeside Drive at Creek Drive, a two-car crash being reported there. And then we're going to mention a new problem. It is in Castroville. It's on 156 at Castroville Boulevard. It's a big rig and a car. They're off to the shoulder. And Morgan Hill, northbound 101 before Tennant Avenue. The right lane blocked. The reason, it's some sort of stall. So, Santa Cruz Mountains, Bear Creek Road at 17. We have a toolbox enclosed scattered in the lanes. That's traffic on KRXA.
It's It's Veterans Day on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I was walking over the highway. I saw above me and in the skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for me. I roamed and rambled and followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. And all around me, a voice was calling. Yeah, this land was made for me. This land is your land. This land is my land. California, New York Island, New Mexico, Ocean Waters. Yeah, this land.
We continue with Sergeant Jeffrey Millard, served in Iraq. He's the D.C. chapter president of Iraq Veterans Against the War, and he's also a journalist at truthout.org. He spells Jeff with a G. Sometimes that throws people off, but that'll help you find him, particularly if you go to truthout.org. Jeff, next I wanted to talk about Lieutenant Aaron Watata. I've had a couple of opportunities to speak with him, and I'm so impressed with his courage and determination. And it appears that's been rewarded. It's a little soon to declare a mission accomplished in this case, but a federal court ruling issued on Friday makes it very difficult for the Army to conduct further court-martial proceedings against Lieutenant Watata.
The federal judge stepped in and basically ruled in every account in favor of Lieutenant Watata. It looks as though the fact that double jeopardy has attached will go through. The judge way overstepped his bounds when he threw out the stipulation of fact. The prosecution didn't really want that, even though they made the motion for dismissal. The defense certainly didn't want that, and the defense certainly did not see that as a concession. Nor really did the prosecution, having been sitting in the courtroom at the time when the judge threw it out. Everyone in the room was amazed that all of a sudden, after spending days talking about the stipulation of fact, that the judge suddenly wanted to throw it out.
Mm-hmm. And this stipulation, it was part of an attempted plea bargain during the first trial, and it got a little murky there. Can you sort it out for us in simple terms?
Well, the stipulation of fact, to simplify it, wasn't really part of a plea bargain. What they did was drop a couple of the charges down in order for Lieutenant Watata to simply say, I didn't get on this plane. I was supposed to have this flight record, but I didn't get on the plane. That way there, they don't have to call people who wrote the orders and have to enter in the flight manifest and call, 100 different witnesses, say that, yes, his name was on this list. And basically, Lieutenant Watata stipulated to those facts, to the simple fact that, yes, there was a plane going to Iraq, and no, he did not get on it.
And didn't he also stipulate that he made public comments to try to avoid having journalists called to testify that made public comments?
Yes, he also stipulated to the fact that this was him giving these interviews. Now, that would have possibly, if he had not done that, opened up a whole other batch of worms as to could the military drag in journalists into court on this. A number of Truth Out journalists were in the crosshairs over that. So it was a murky situation there, but to overly simplify it, it was simple facts of the case that both sides agreed on, and to both the prosecution and the defense agreed on, and the judge at the last hour said, well, this is a confession. Well, the defense certainly didn't think so, and neither did the prosecution, but the judge threw it out anyway. And without that stipulation of fact being entered into the record, the panel, remember there's no jury in a courts martial, there's just a panel. And the panel in this court-martial, moving forward, would not have been able to consider that there was a plane that had gone to Iraq that he was supposed to have been on, and therefore could never have returned a guilty verdict on any of the charges, because there wasn't the stipulation of fact. And so the judge forced the mistrial that shouldn't have been a mistrial. I think that if you talk to Eric Seitz about the first case, he was pretty confident going forward that he could have gotten a not guilty verdict.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that all involved are pretty happy with this better court juncture. Well, maybe not all involved. I don't think that the government in this case is all that happy.
They're not so happy.
Not General Dubik.
But Jeff, briefly, how many other people are refusing to deploy?
Well, this is an interesting question. It's something that the military has stopped releasing figures on. It's definitely a number that's going up and up. The AWOL numbers are going much higher, and the government really has tightened its information canon on these numbers. So we can't really say for sure mm-hmm. how many. We do know that recruiting numbers are down and that they're having trouble meeting the rotation schedule, especially in light of the so-called surge, which just screwed up the tentative rotation schedule that was barely working in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
This war is really, truly breaking our military.
Yes,
if you love the U.S. military and you think that we need a strong military to defend this country, you cannot be in favor of the war in Iraq.
It is
clearly destroying us.
Sorry, Jeff, I want to sneak in a quick call here. John in Carmel Valley, just 30 seconds, but go ahead, John.
I'm wondering if your guest has seen the movie Gallipoli about the First World War. You mentioned it earlier about how, you know, originally Veterans Day was Armistice Day. We tend to forget that. Have you seen Gallipoli?
Sorry, I haven't seen that film.
Get a hold of it and take a look at it. It's an Australian film, late 70s. It really shows the horror, better than any I've seen, of what you pointed out. You know, 10 million men, mostly military, died in that war.
John, I'm sorry, out of time here,
okay.
But thanks for bringing that forward. And Jeff Millard, thank you for your work since you came back from Iraq, and I salute you for going to Iraq despite opposing the war.
It's always a pleasure to come out here.
All right, we'll talk again. That's Jeff Millard, a sergeant and now a reporter at truthout.org, D.C. chapter president of Iraq Veterans Against the War. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hemp, the superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp, used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp. This God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments. Loaded with potassium, magnesium, calcium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and nutrients not available in other plants. Hemp can be stored with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Could this be the government's best-kept secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. San Francisco is her home, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is there demanding answers about the big oil spill in the bay.
There are serious questions about what the relationship is between the Coast Guard and these ships. Are they giving them advice or are they giving them orders?
The Coast Guard says crew members of the cargo ship that struck the Bay Bridge didn't seem to be communicating with each other, and that may have contributed to the accident. Federal prosecutors have launched a criminal investigation. The 58,000 gallons of oil that spilled from the ship's tank caused an environmental disaster. KCBS Radio's Bob Melrose reports.
Cleanup efforts now are focusing on the beaches, the shoreline. A lot of the oil that was spilled into the bay has either dissipated or gone out to sea. There's not a whole lot left there to skim off. The volunteers and the Coast Guard are working on cleaning up the beaches, trying to get as many fouled up birds as they possibly can sent to various wildlife hospitals to see if they can be brought back to be able to fly again.
If you're traveling by air for Thanksgiving, bring a book or an iPod and be prepared for a long wait in the terminal. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
The airlines say they're taking steps to reduce delays during the Thanksgiving travel crush, but since one in four flights are ending up delayed now, don't count on an on-time performance. The airlines say they're adding more people for the holidays, making it easier to contact passengers by cell phone and other means, and waiving fees for changing flights in case of delays. But a record number of flyers are projected, and flights are expected to average 90% full.
Another encouraging report from the U.S. military in Iraq. The number of rocket and mortar attacks in October was half what it was in the same month last year. CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland says the U.S. troop surge and improved Iraqi security forces get the credit, but it's wise to be wary.
One doesn't know for sure if this is a temporary respite or if it is an enduring
change in the character of the war in Iraq. Insurgencies throughout history have adapted their tactics and techniques and have been very patient, knowing that time is on their side. So one has to worry that the insurgency might just be taking a break, remaining quiet, hoping that the U.S. will reduce forces, and then it can come out in strength.
The medical examiner in Phoenix says Carol Gottbaum, the New York City woman who died in custody after making a scene at Sky Harbor Airport, was impaired by alcohol and prescription antidepressants. Dr. Cyril Wecht, an independent pathologist hired by the family, agrees but says officers could have prevented Gottbaum's death.
They place her in a room, a secluded room. They handcuff her behind her back. They manacle the handcuffs to a chain attached to the bench chair arrangement. They do not observe her.
She accidentally hanged herself in her shackles as she struggled to get free. The Dow was up most of the day, but at the end it was down 55 points to close below 13,000. The Nasdaq lost 43 points today. This is CBS News.
Taking care of business, Office Depot.
Does your company go through ink like water? Then Office Depot can take care of you. Office Depot guarantees to be in stock on a huge selection of all the top brands of ink. And you can save up to 40% every day on your ink purchases when you use your Work Life Rewards card. Buy multi-packs of ink and recycle three HP, Dell, or Lexmark ink cartridges. Work Life Rewards are paid quarterly in the form of an Office Depot reward card when you earn a minimum of $10 in rewards. Excludes HP ink. See store and visit myworklifereward.com for details.
We're shopping mall, there's shopping mall.
Things that are small, Bob's Big and Tall. Traffic's a mess, there's no distress. Find a new way with no delay.
Traffic's a mess? Fear not. The Garmin Nuvi is here with traffic alerts and clear voice-prompted directions.
Turn right on 34th Street.
Give a Garmin.
The Garmin Nuvi GPS. Find it at Garmin.com or your favorite retailer.
Garmin.com.
One of the nation's major car makers has a new strategy to discourage people from calling in sick. WWJ Radio's Jeff Gilbert has the story.
General Motors' latest incentive plan is aimed at its own workers. Go a year without taking a sick day and you'll be in the running to win a new car. Absenteeism is a big problem at auto plants, running as high as 10%, triple the average for other industries. GM's also cracking down on those who have too many absences, requiring more evidence than just a doctor's excuse, and making it harder to take a sick day before a holiday or a long weekend. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
Some disabled people have service dogs. Patty Cooper of Waitsfield, Massachusetts, has a horse, and she's fighting with the management of her apartment complex to let her keep it. It's a miniature horse, 100 pounds, 32 inches tall. Cooper, who has brittle bones and suffers from celiac disease, says it's the perfect helper, but the landlord is worried about the mess. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. You expect outstanding performance from your office staff. Shouldn't you expect the same from your office furniture? The Hahn Company is the market leader in providing flexible office furnishings that deliver durability, comfort, and improved workplace performance. Every Hahn product is backed by a limited lifetime warranty and built to withstand the rigors of everyday use year after year. Hahn, smart now, smarter later. For a free catalog or more information, visit gethahn.com. That's gethon.com. I'll see you on the Osgood File.
I just peeked in your medicine cabinet.
Excuse me?
Yeah, wow.
I can explain.
How do you explain all those different pain relievers?
Oh, that. Well, I have one for headaches. I got another one when I hurt my back. And...
Stop. It's time to go all Advil. Advil is the every pain reliever.
Isn't there
something that's stronger or lasts longer? No.
So it'll work when my legs are sore from chasing down snoopers.
I suppose. Shouldn't you be all Advil?
Compared to OTC pain relievers, use as directed.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show at 6 minutes after the hour here on the official Veterans Day.
Teach the world to snuff the fires and the liars.
say I know it's just a song, but it's fine. For the rest of me, this is a love attack. I know it, our body's back. It's just like any fat. It retracts before impact. And just like passion, if the passion's over with it and hip. If you got the goods, they'll come in, buy it, jump to stay in the click. So don't delay, act now. Supplies are running out. Allowing you're still alive. Takes 2 8 years to arrive. And if you follow them, may be out tomorrow. But if we are the shine, you might as well be walking on the sun.
Lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation here. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 1-888-573-8372. My personal email is peter@peterbcollins.com. Joining me now is Larry Collins, no relation to your humble host. He is the president of the San Francisco Crab Boat Owners Association. Larry, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Peter. You sure we're not related?
Well, I'm pretty sure, yeah. We've got some common interests, though. I'm devastated that the crab season has been postponed indefinitely because I look forward to this season every year to consume as much Dungeness as I can, you know, within limits. And I'm also a sailor. I've got a boat on the bay. And so, like you, I'm affected by this 58,000-gallon oil spill that occurred after a freighter of the Hanjin Line, a big container ship 800 foot long, collided with the Bay Bridge in fog last week. And we've heard quite a bit of criticism of the Coast Guard for its response. Let me ask you first and foremost, we only have information that we can speculate on about what went wrong. But given the advances in maritime electronics and navigation tools, with GPS that should have been able to show the bar pilot, an experienced guy named Coda, exactly where he was, with radar systems that overlay over a computer screen, like a video game, that show you not only where you are, but what's directly in front of you. With all those tools, plus the fact that the Coast Guard radioed just a minute or so before the ship made contact with the bridge and said, hey, you're on the wrong course. How could all of this gone so badly wrong?
Well, Peter, have you ever driven your boat around in zero visibility?
Yes, I have, and there was one time that I was just so grateful that I didn't actually run right into Treasure Island.
Yeah, it's not easy to do driving in zero visibility. We do it all the time because we have to. I'm not sure. I wasn't on the vessel, so I'm not sure what happened, what went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
As a commercial fisherman, this is absolutely devastating to me and to all my guys at the crab boat owners there in the city. We make our living salmon fishing in the summertime and crab fishing in the wintertime, and we've had a couple of really bad summers here.
Yes, you have.
Salmon fishing. So we were kind of put every last dime we had into the boats to get ready for crab season, and we were all ready to go here when this happened. And now it looks like we're looking at a delay of the crab season. And we were, you know, it's devastating, absolutely devastating, as it is, I'm sure, for everybody that loves to eat the crabs.
Yeah.
We were lucky here in the city. Unlike Bodega and Half Moon, because the Port of San Francisco stepped up to the plate. And on Saturday, they came down to the wharf and started talking to me and said that they would like us to go out and start helping with the cleanup. So we said, fantastic. And we unloaded the traps off the boats and went over and got with the cleanup contractor and loaded the booms and the oil stuff on the boat.
So are you actually just dragging giant industrial-strength Swiffers around the bay?
Yeah. they're called pom-poms.
Uh-huh.
And we've got 22 boats over there. Today they were behind Angel Island, and they're getting a lot of oil. You know, fishermen are funny. They're talking on the radio, hey, we're getting them. We're backtacking here. We're going to, you know, they're competitive, and these guys are getting a lot of oil up off the water. And, you know, I am so impressed with the Port of San Francisco for, you know, cutting through the red tape and getting working watermen out on the bay here that can actually make a difference.
But Larry Collins, haven't we seen kind of mixed signals where there was a guy over on one of the beaches, I think it's Stinson in Marin County, who was handcuffed and told, get off the beach, because he was there with some other volunteers. They supplied their own plastic bags and paper towels. I don't know exactly what they were using. But he was handcuffed and escorted off the beach for trying to volunteer to help with the cleanup.
You know, that's one of the really wonderful things about living in the Bay Area. I don't think there's anywhere on the planet where people care about the environment like the people that live here. And I was touched by that story when I read it. And every you know, commercial fisherman on the coast, you know, we're the biggest environmentalists. If the environment is good, then we make a living. If it gets dirty and there's not water in the rivers or there's oil in the water, we're out of work. So we're the most ardent environmentalists. And I understand these guys, people that are going down to the beach that want to help, and I applaud them for that. I mean, it just hurts your heart when you see these birds flopping around all coated with oil.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody, you know, knows that's wrong and wants to help, and I understand that. And that's one of the things that makes the Bay Area so special, Peter.
Mm-hmm. But Larry, we also have reports from the city of San Francisco. Supervisor Dufty is the acting mayor, and he said that he offered qualified, trained people to help with the cleanup, and that as of Monday morning, not all of them had been, given tasks and assigned to locations to work. So I'm glad to see that your fellow crab fishermen are out there helping with the cleanup. And I do understand that not everybody is qualified, and some people will get in the way. Some people might injure themselves or, not know really how to clean up these ugly glops of oil. So I do understand that some restraint is required of the public. But it does appear that they don't really have their act together in terms of coordinating what is turning into a massive cleanup effort.
Well, Peter, there's city government, there's county government, there's state government, and there's federal government. So far, it looks like the city government's on the ball. I would say the federal government isn't, and the state government I'm still wondering about.
All right, that's succinct. Now, Larry, tell us what we can do to help you and your fellow crabbers deal with the situation, deal with the economic loss that you are facing. What kind of remedies are in place, and can we, for example, send emails or call Governor Schwarzenegger to tell him that we support his intervention to help you at this difficult time?
Well, the one thing I would ask from the public is some patience here. We're dealing with a situation that we don't have any experience dealing with here. This has never happened to us before, or not in recent history, that we've had to deal with this kind of thing. So we're kind of like the three blind mice running around trying to feel our way through this maze. And so patience needs, you know, from the crabbers and from the public. We care first and foremost that the consumer gets the highest quality seafood, and we want to make sure it's safe, and we want to make sure that we do the right thing here. So we would ask patience, and we're going to try and be patient with the state government, and we're going to feel our way through this thing. And, you know, maybe we won't start right on time, and but maybe we'll take it in increments, like maybe a week, or, you know, that we can take a look at it and slow the season down, delay the season a little bit for a week, and then you know, we got to work our way up to it here so that everything's safe and then we'll go fishing.
And Larry, we need to take a break here in a minute, but briefly before the break, What are the indicators you're looking for before you can green light the crab season?
Well, you know, we want to clean up as much of this mess as we can and as quickly as we can. I don't think there's enough boats on the water. So far, I'm only seeing cleanup in the bay. I'm not seeing any ocean cleanup at all. And we need to, you know, throw more boats at this to start sopping this mess up.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a quick break and return. My guest is Larry Collins. He's president of the San Francisco Crab Boat Owners Association. If you have a question or a comment about the oil spill that has, stopped the crab season for now, at least it's suspended temporarily, give us a call. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's 18 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, this is Paul.
And Cynthia.
Of the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden. And we'd like to thank you for supporting this locally owned and operated Carmel business for nearly 40 years.
Nestled in Carmel by the Sea, the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden occupy a beautiful space on Dolores between 5th and 6th, showcasing an array of books on local interests, new releases, bestsellers, novels, children's, metaphysical, and much more. Plus, you'll enjoy taking a good look at our music, healing tools, cards, statuary, fountains, and more.
Proud to be a part of the Carmel business community, we invite you to see us soon.
Pilgrim's Way offers one-on-one intuitive counseling in the bookstore. You may call ahead for an appointment or just walk in. Whether you're a local resident or a visitor to our beautiful peninsula, we have something for everyone.
The Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, between 5th and 6th on Dolores.
Discover an imaginative adventure. Pick up a good read at the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
All right, let's give you a little tasty traffic on this Veterans Day. And again, a heartfelt salute to all of our vets who served our nation. All right, we want to talk a little bit about a little problem working. Well, let's see, Santa Cruz Mountains, Bear Creek Road at 17. Still reports of a toolbox and clothes scattered in those lanes. Morgan Hill, northbound 101 before Tenet, right lane partially blocked. Some sort of stall, though that's in the clearing stage, which is good news. Checking Santa Cruz Mountains, northbound, no problem. Guess what? Southbound, no problem. What else we got going on? How about Aptos, southbound one after State Park, with a vehicle on fire. It's engulfed in flames. Right shoulder. There's trees in the right shoulder that are also on fire. Fire department is on scene. Also, Aptos. Santa Clara County, 152 at Bloomfield. SUV partially blocking the roadway there. That's a look at traffic on KRXA.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Yes, Elvis, accidents will happen. We had a doozy on San Francisco Bay last week as an 800-foot ocean cargo ship collided with the Bay Bridge structures in pea soup 8:30 in the morning. No indication that the pilot or others were under the influence or otherwise impaired. And we're still waiting for an investigation to explain exactly how this accident occurred. Larry Collins is with us. He's president of the San Francisco Crab Boat Owners Association. And Larry, are you satisfied overall with the response? Because I remember hearing public relations and news stories over the last few years about how well prepared the oil industry is for a spill on the bay.
No, Peter, that's a bunch of baloney.
Okay.
back in 1993, our whole fleet at a city was trained by the Marine Spill Response, MSRC, Marine Spill Response Corporation. We were all trained in oil cleanup. And we had to be recertified every year, and they called us up for the recertification for about three more years. In about 96, they stopped calling. And I called them back, and I said, look, we've got all these boats, all these watermen, they're all trained. What's going on? And they said, we're out of money. So since about 96 or 97, basically, the Bay has been bereft of its most talented, you know, operators. Mm-hmm. Our guys fish the Bay for herring with nets. We know the tides. We know the coastline. We know what the water does in the Bay. We've got hundreds and hundreds of years experience when you add us all up. And we're really, you know, the best first line of defense. We're kind of like the Minutemen that you would call. We can be there within an hour or two. You know, we'll drop everything to try and protect the Bay. And after about 96, we stopped getting the call.
Mm-hmm. So how do we remedy this? Do we need to have more money devoted to these emergency preparedness systems?
Yeah, we need to make sure that the guys do the drills at least once a year. We need to make sure everybody has their HAZWOPR cards updated and their certification updated every year. And, you know, unfortunately, it takes an accident like this to focus government to make sure that they mandate that this happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will just drive around the bay with giant ships as cheaply as they can if the government doesn't step in and say, we need to be safer, we need to have people ready to respond, we need to spend the money to do that.
Larry, give us a little more information on what this bunker oil that has polluted the bay and, as you say, has flowed out beyond the Golden Gate into the Pacific. What exactly does it do to taint the crab, and at what point will the degree of pollution be reduced to the point where you can safely pull the crabs out of the water?
Well, I'm a crabber, Peter. I'm not a scientist or an oil guy. Those questions would be better asked of the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but in general, it's more than just affecting the taste. You're concerned that this oil and bunker oil is as toxic as it can be, that this actually would taint the crab if you pull them up through the polluted water. Is that the idea?
Well, all of our boats have circulation systems in them. We bring the crabs in live.
Right.
So the crab can be fine, 25 miles up the coast where we fish, or 10 miles outside here. And then, you know, you run it into, drop it at the dock, and you bring it alive, and you run over a patch of oil in the night you don't
mm-hmm.
see.
Yeah.
And then the oil runs through your circulation system and into the tank, and, you know, it's not a good deal.
Right.
We need to get this cleaned up, and we need to let a little bit of time pass. The ocean's a wonderful system. It can take a lot of abuse and respond to it and clean itself up. We need to just slow everything down here, not jump into the crab season. We need to just delay it a little bit and take a look at it and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And just one more question about the dispersion of this oil. Because the water is so cold, Larry, does it end up turning into little globules, and then does that get suspended in the water, which makes it more difficult? It's not all just floating on the surface anymore.
Well, most of it, because the water is so cold, most of it will end up on the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you can clean it up off the beaches. It's going to take some time. But most of this oil will end up on the beaches and will be cleaned up. But it will take some time.
Well, Larry, I want you to know we're on your side. I'm not going to buy that Alaska king crab that's fresh for $21 a pound at the supermarket. I'm going to reserve my cash for when the crab season starts so I can support you and your colleagues.
Well, Peter, we appreciate that, and I'm sure that we'll have this all cleaned up so that you have crab for Christmas.
All right, and I'm going to keep the butter in the freezer. I just bought 4 pounds of it, but we'll be standing by. Thank you, Larry Collins from the San Francisco Crab Bone Owners Association.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Aldous Tyler joins us to talk about nonstop radio preserving progressive talk.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey, Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel, Staff of Life in Santa Cruz, and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz and Capitola. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Carmo Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Carmo Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Carmo Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Carmo Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmo Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmo Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Don't your children deserve the very best for the holidays? Locally owned and operated, Thinker Toys has been the first holiday shopping stop for generations of parents in Carmel and Monterey, where owner Mark Phillips and his staff take great pride in personally serving every customer. Thinker Toys is dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly. While Thinker Toys specializes in educational toys for newborns through six-year-olds, there's no better place than Thinker Toys to buy great toys for thinking kids of all ages. Make your child's Christmas, Hanukkah, Chrismica, Kwanzaa, or the holiday of your choice extra special with high-quality educational toys and games from Thinker Toys. Open every day at 10 a.m. in Carmel at 7th and San Carlos and in Monterey at the Del Monte Center. Drop by Thinker Toys today and tell Mark that Peter B. sent you. Happy holidays from Thinker Toys.
The Direct Action Task Force Against Torture will be holding a three-day teach-in and vigil from Friday, November 16th through Sunday, November 18th. This event calls for an immediate end to the use of torture by any country. The teach-in and vigil will be held outside the gates to the Presidio of Monterey at Private Bolio Road and Lighthouse Avenue. The event is free and open to the public. For information and schedule, our website is peacemonterey.org or call 831-643-2705.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Hey, I can't find that on the radio. Y'all turn to that station.
Thanks for dialing up the radio station you're currently tuned to. That's your gateway to the Peter B. Collins Show. Many people listen online, too, and I appreciate that. You can also catch our podcast, new and improved, at peterbcollins.com. But we are part of an effort to sustain and expand progressive talk radio in this country. And to be candid, we've been experiencing some setbacks recently. Aldous Tyler is with us. He's with NonstopRadio.com, founder of that group based in Madison, Wisconsin, where last year about this time they waged a successful campaign to hold on to their progressive talk station. And Aldous has been on the front lines of many other battles, and he's scarred and bruised and just a little bit bloody these days. Hello, Aldous.
Hello, Peter. Well, actually, I'm in a little better health than that might suggest.
Well, good.
Have a little good news to share tonight. If you're ever going through the Windy City, as of 2 weeks from now, they will be doubling their broadcasting power.
Well, that's great. You know, I came out of Chicago Radio, and the station that has been carrying progressive talk there is a very weak station that is licensed to Highland Park or somewhere on the very north cusp of Chicago. And have they picked up a transmitter on the south side, do you know?
Actually, right in the heart, and right in the heart of Chicago, and they're going up, they're doubling their power. They are still going to be a daytimer,
mm-hmm.
But when they are broadcasting, they're estimating that they could reach all the way to Milwaukee and all the way to Indiana border, and basically the entire Chicagoland zone. They figure they're going to be able to pick up potentially a couple million more listeners.
Well, that's great, because I love Chicago. I had a great time there. And it's a great radio town. It really supports a lot of unusual personalities and different types of expression. So I'm glad to see it's WCPT, right? Chicago Progressive Talk?
That's right. But if you've gone through the town and locked on a preset or something onto 850 AM, that's not going to do it in 2 weeks. They're moving a couple notches down to 820.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be 8:20 a.m., and they're going to be broadcasting with most likely, if you go through town, I can almost guarantee you, if you can pick them up before, you'll really be able to pick them up now.
Yeah. Well, that 8:20 frequency is licensed to Chicago itself. I can actually remember 30 years ago it was called WAIT. And I think they've been doing a sports format or something in between.
Yes, and both 8:50 and 8:20 are owned by the same people, and with the success that WCPT has shown with the progressive talk, they are actually flipping them around. WAIT is moving to 850, and the weaker station, because, frankly, they could see that the progressive talk in Chicago was being much better received.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the recent items in the loss column is San Diego, where you and I have talked many times over the last 3 months or so. Once we got wind that Clear Channel was considering dropping progressive talk on KLSD. Now, as you look back at this particular episode, it's different from some of the other format changes, even those done at Clear Channel stations, where that happened very quickly. There was very little time to mobilize people or even make the case to management to preserve the format. And in that case, I'm thinking Boston, New Haven, Cincinnati, Columbus, where, you know, the format changes happened pretty much in the dark of night, and there really wasn't much of an opportunity. But in San Diego, word either leaked out or was permitted to sneak out when in August that Clear Channel was contemplating a change.
Well, that's right, Peter, and actually this is part of why this happened, because I was curious about this myself, and I investigated a bit. Part of why this happened is more and more people are becoming sympathetic to the idea that, you know what, there really ought to be more choices on the dial. There really ought to be, basically, you should be able to pick up as something as basic as a crystal radio set and be able to find a point of view that speaks to you. And progressive talk speaks to so many people that aren't spoken to by any other format. And so because there are so many people who are now getting the idea that, you know, even if it isn't their own personal ideology, it really should be allowed to stay on the air. So what happens is now we have people who are on the inside of various radio organizations here and there who are willing to let leak these kinds of things. And most often, because they've heard of me by now, thankfully, or at least if they haven't, let's make sure they know about nonstopradio.com. But the point being is that they'll contact me, and then I'll verify the sources and see what's going on, and I'll get the news out there. So we actually have a chance to get traction and get moving.
Just one more item about San Diego. Did they actually move Stacey Taylor to the HD channel, or did they just move the syndicated national programs?
The HD channel is, as of this moment, completely unoccupied due to the fact that none of the syndicators would cooperate.
Oh, okay.
Basically, Big Eddie, Air America, none of them were about to. Basically, what they said is they said, you cannot move our programming to a place where we don't consent it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they put their foot down, and rightfully so, because HD radio, sure, you've probably heard commercials for it, but how many people do you know actually own one of these receivers?
I don't know anybody, and I'm in the game.
Exactly. So basically the point is that, you know, with as rare as that is, anybody who's in radio understands that to go from terrestrial to HD radio in a market is actually almost worse than being pulled off, because suddenly the demand for it seems a little, what's the best way to put it? It compromises the demand, because what happens is advertisers say, well, there is a progressive talk station, it's over here on this HD radio. And so they're not necessarily going to be swayed into the idea so easily of going for a whole new full-on broadcast station. Now, there is some good news out of San Diego. I can't give you too many specifics, but I've just been talking today with people who said that because we got such early warnings on this, they've been working since August on securing another station in San Diego for progressive talk, and basically, I know it's going to sound vague, but word is there is progress being made.
Well, I've heard similar things, perhaps from the same source or maybe from a different one, and so I'm encouraged by that, and I do hope that there's a broadcaster in that market who will see the potential benefit. Aldous Tyler, one more thing about HD. I'm looking at your San Diego page here, and you have some fascinating statistics that really put this in perspective. The estimation of total HD radio listeners in the country is projected at 500,000 next year. And currently, let's see, there's a study, 73% of people have heard of HD radio, 13% can tell you what it is, 11% express interest in owning one, but less than 1% of these respondents has ever visited a store to even check out an HD radio receiver. And this reminds me of a few years back when I was a pioneer early programmer on Sirius satellite radio. And one of the reasons I agreed to do a show on Sirius was they promised me that in the following year that big auto manufacturers were going to roll out huge numbers, millions and millions of satellite radios. Well, it didn't work out that way, and we ended up talking to some great truck drivers around the country, but it was never a significant audience. It's grown substantially since then, but in those early days, that's what I would compare the infancy of HD to at this point.
Well, and the problem, Peter, is, of course, that there's a lot of similarities, and one of the problems, of course, is when you're relying on the auto industry to install brand-new technology into their cars and trucks, well, of course, that cost is going to get passed down to the consumer, and what's going to happen is most people, if they're in the market for a car nowadays, they're just as strapped for cash as anybody, and if they don't need an option, they're going to say, look, can you just give me the CD player?
Well, it's true. And also, satellite radio is pretty sexy. It is in a lot of cars as an option now. And HD is an unproven platform that I think some people are curious about, but we haven't really seen a massive move in that direction. Aldous Tyler is with us from nonstopradio.com. I want you to visit their website because Aldous is putting together a powerful symposium, a conference that's going to be held in Madison, Wisconsin next August. Tell us a little bit about this. I see my name linked to it there, Aldous.
Yeah, Peter, we're gonna tie you up and ship you out here.
Okay. well, I've been in much more difficult combat zones than Madison, Wisconsin. I mean, I'll have to fend off, beer swilling Wisconsinites and all the party crowd that hangs out there.
Well, actually, you won't have quite as many to deal with because it's going to be in the middle of summer break.
Right.
However,
mm-hmm.
The symposium is going to be August 1st through 3rd here in Madison, Wisconsin. And even though, Peter, that's as far off as it is, people like yourself Chink Uger from the Young Turks and Ed Schultz, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, all these people have signed on already to commit to be there. And so what we're doing right now is if people are going to be willing to step up and make the same commitment to be there that you did, we're going to go ahead and give them an extra break on the registration. If they go to nonstopradio.com right now,
mm-hmm.
go to the symposium and register, and they type your name, Peter, into the discount code, they'll get $50 off.
Wow, I've never been worth so much, Aldous.
Well, and the more people that use you, the more you'll be worth. So.
Well, I think this is important because, there are commercial radio industry gatherings, but they're dominated by business people, bean counters, and folks who are either right-wingers who don't really believe that progressive talk should be viable and they're doing everything they can to snuff it out. And also people who are just kind of politically agnostic and who will put anything on the radio that they think will make them money. And I think it's very important what you're doing because you're coalescing the progressives in this what is still a format in its infancy. And we've hit some turbulence. And we really need to, I think, take measure of one another and find ways that we can advance our common interest, which is to diversify the media, not by denying Rush Limbaugh a microphone or a radio station, but by, proving to the commercial radio industry that this is viable, it can be profitable, and that they need to give us a chance to really establish that and prove it to them.
Well, and there's basically right now, Peter, progressive talk has come a long way in a very short time, but it's at a crossroads. It's either going to do what a lot of people predicted and become the next fad to fade away, which you and I both know cannot happen for the sake of this country, frankly, or it will go ahead and be buoyed on into a future where it will become just as established a format as jazz or, frankly, any other kind of talk that's out there. As a matter of fact, even more so. But it can't do that without a community of support behind it. And that's what this symposium is going to do. It's going to bring together media professionals, talk show hosts, and progressive activists from around the country to forge that network of support that will bring progressive talk into its future.
Well, and I love the way you've worded this on the registration form, Aldous. You can either be a conspirator, an agent, I guess that's an agent of change, or a ringleader.
Oh, absolutely. Basically, the idea is this. Everyone is there. Everyone who's there is expected to conspire with other people, to get together and really dig down and find connections and make sure that you know who everyone else is, so that that way, when you need to make that connection again, when you need a graphic artist, when you need someone with voice talent, when you need someone with recording, when you need someone with funding, you know who to go to. And so that's what the conspiring is all about. Now, being an agent, well, as an agent, you know you need some backup. So by going in as an agent, your registration is a little bit more, but it helps us afford to let more people in at the conspirator level. So basically, you're getting your backup in that way. Mm-hmm. And ringleaders, well, hey, they need a whole team. So the advanced registration there helps even more conspirators to get in.
Well, I think you have a great concept here. Also, we should mention John Nichols, who is a friend of mine. He writes for The Nation. He's also the editorial page editor of the Capital Times there in Madison.
Yes,
and he publishes about a book a year. Most recent was about impeachment. And he has also been a major leader of the media reform movement in this country through Free Press and the media conferences that they've been putting on about every 18 months. And I'm really glad to see that he'll be there to participate in Madison this next summer.
Well, yes, sir. Let me just say one thing about John Nichols that I think is really important to put out there. You know, he could have seen this symposium as competition. It's happening a couple months after the National Conference for Media Reform is going to happen in Minneapolis. But you know what? He understands that media reform as a whole is very important to go ahead and have, but he understands that progressive talk and securing its future is important enough to have its own event. And not only did he not see this competition, he is coming by and supporting it with the full force of him, just everything he brings to the table.
Yeah, this is great. Well, Aldous, thanks for joining us today. Nonstopradio.com is the website where you can get full information. Just click on the symposium link there on the homepage and go to town.
And remember, use the discount code PETER. You get $50 off, but only through Thanksgiving.
Okay. Thank you, Aldous. Keep it up.
You're welcome.
All right. There's a conspirator, an agent, and a ringleader, all in one body. All right, we're going to take a break and return for your phone calls. Ben's on the line from Salinas, and you can join us, too. Toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Let me know what's on your mind this official observance of Veterans Day, 2007.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What concept? AM 540 KRXA.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters at Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
Joseph's Upholstery of Monterey will satisfy all of your upholstery needs, whether for your home or business. Joe Vitale finishes headboards, chairs, sofas, and pillows. Joe imports the finest selected fabrics from Italy, Germany, France, and other European countries to add a distinctive touch to your home or office. Joseph's Upholstery is conveniently located at 222 Ramona Avenue in Monterey. They're open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and on Saturday, 9 to 1. Call Joe at 831-372-3224. Remember, at Joseph's Upholstery, there's one low price for all. And free delivery and pickup is available throughout Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. Call Joe Vitale now at Joseph's Upholstery, 372-3224.
All right, let's take a look at traffic, and they give you the latest, starting off with a problem being reported. How about Aptos? It's southbound 1 after State Park Road, a vehicle on fire. It's engulfed in flames. Apparently, there's some flowers on the roadway as well. They're on fire. Trees are also on fire as well. Fire department is on scene. Santa Clara County, Highway 152 after Bloomfield. We do have an SUV partially blocking the roadway there. Back to Aptos, northbound 1 at State Park. We have a two-car crash, center divide. And that is a look at traffic here on KRXA.
We're in the home stretch here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you want to call in with a comment, I've got room for it. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Ben joins us from Salinas. Hi, Ben. It's been a while.
Hello, Peter.
Great to hear from you, my man. How's it going?
I love what you're doing, and I love the interconnect with Chris Kingcraft out of Sacramento. Between you and her, you guys are discussing the stuff Californians know and think about, and power to both of you. My question, Peter, is what did we do to deserve Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi? I mean, Feinstein is voting for a guy when he can't seem to say waterboarding is torture. Has she ever gone through that thing that reporter went through and had it done to her? Would she come out of there if somebody connected the batteries to her testicles? Wouldn't she call? She would know what to call it if it was her. These people are so insulated. But why do we, you know, with Nancy Pelosi? She will not. She seems to think it's her new job to obstruct Dennis Kucinich, John Conyers, and Henry Waxman.
Well,
it's not her job to obstruct them. It's her job to empower them to get at the truth that this country needs to heal.
Ben,
the Republicans are smart because they figured the way to defeat us is to keep seeing that we have weak leaders. What do we do to deserve Diane Lieberman and Nancy Pelosi?
All right, Ben, first of all, let's take them one at a time.
Yes,
because
I'm a little worked up here. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I appreciate your passion. You haven't called in a while, and I really miss you, so thanks for dialing in today.
Well, I like to make room for other callers because I love to hear all points of view. As long as they're honest and intelligent, bring
mm-hmm.
it on.
First of all, related to Dianne Feinstein,
yes, sir.
I invite you to tune in Wednesday at 3 o'clock. We're going to spend the full hour with reporter Peter Byrne. He was the one who was honored by Project Censored for his in-depth reporting
yep.
on the conflicts of interest that Senator Feinstein has because of her husband's multi-billion dollar investments.
In China.
These are actually the Perini Construction Company, for example, has earned something like $2.6 billion in contracts in Iraq. And some of those were signed off on, were voted for by Senator Feinstein before she resigned from the Defense Appropriations Committee in the Senate about, I think, a year and a half ago.
The wolves guarding the wolves, huh?
It's very important, I think, to understand that. But even with that, there is no excuse and no defense for the recent actions of Senator Feinstein. In supporting the Southwick confirmation,
yep.
the Democrats were on the way to just making that guy wait so long he was going to withdraw.
Yep.
A confirmed racist and extreme conservative, and she decided to buck the leadership of the Senate.
Yep.
And she helped vote it out of committee and then turned around and actually voted for the confirmation on the Senate floor. A week later, she did the same thing on the Mukasey confirmation.
Exactly.
Now, Schumer was the other vote there. But if you, the two of them could have supported Harry Reid and derailed the confirmation of Mukasey because Reid had pledged that if it didn't come to the floor, he would not permit an end run to allow a full Senate vote up or down on Mukasey.
Yep.
And she greased the skids
yep.
to send it to the floor.
Yep.
And last week, she dangled the prospect that, oh gosh, maybe she would oppose immunity for the phone companies in the bill that will legalize the illegal spying program on American citizens and others.
That ties it all together. So it's no wonder that the Congress has a 5% rating lower than Mr. Cheney's. holy cow, Peter, what's it going to take? I'm almost afraid to answer the question. What's it going to take to knock us off of our couches and out there fighting for our damn Constitution? That's all we live for. With that signature is the only thing that keeps us free and not in some concentration camp waiting if we're going to be next to be killed and buried as fertilizer or whatever they're going to do with us.
Yeah. Now to Pelosi. As you know, I know Nancy Pelosi. I worked on a campaign for her a few years ago.
Yeah.
I respect her, and I am so deeply disappointed,
yep,
particularly that she allowed the FISA reform bill to go to the floor in August. I mean, it's unconscionable, and I can make no excuses for her.
Can she say habeas corpus?
She had the power to just put that thing in the pocket of her Gucci suit and go on vacation and kill it.
There you go.
And instead, she submitted or gave in to pressure from the Blue Dogs and other conservatives in her caucus,
yep,
with the lame excuse that, well, we'll put an expiration date on it and we'll fix it in the fall. Well, the fix is falling apart. The Senate is not going along with it. They are going to legalize the lawbreaking of the Bush administration and give amnesty to the phone companies and to the executives in the Bush administration. And, of course, we can't even think about amnesty for illegal immigrants in this country.
You know what my millionaire friends say about that when I ask them, and I know many of them? They say, listen, stupid, don't expect the rich to save you from the rich.
Well, there's some of that.
Okay.
You know, the Pelosi's are a wealthy family. She comes from a dynasty of political figures in Baltimore. And it's really just sad to see, even when she can tell you that what she's doing is tragic. All right.
Yep.
She knew that the NSA reform bill was bad. She called it, an obscenity on the Constitution, I think was her phrase.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, she's willing to cave in. And as you know, Ben, I make no excuses for her on the impeachment issue. It never should have been left on the table. I mean, I'm sorry, it shouldn't have been left off the table after she won the speakership. Before that, it was arguable. After that, inexcusable. Thank you, Ben. I got to run because Trigger's here. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same stations, with another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Until we meet again.
If you own a classic car, or you've been looking for a special classic, Newport Classic Motors offers complete services for all classic, exotic, and custom vehicles. Dennis Jones and the expert team at Newport Classic Motors, your one-stop classic car headquarters. They offer guaranteed services, from a taillight lens to a frame-up restoration, sandblasting, chroming, even airbrushing, pinstriping, and custom painting for cars, trucks, motorcycles, boats, and even golf carts. Get 20% off any custom paint job booked in October. Newport Classic Motors, located in Southern California near Disneyland. They can arrange quick, reasonable transport from anywhere in the U.S. They'll also buy or sell your classic vehicle fast. Call Dennis today at 714-333-6822. That's 714-333-6822. Newport Classic Motors.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. If you're traveling by air for Thanksgiving, don't expect smooth sailing. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Starting this Friday, the 12-day period around Thanksgiving will find airports jam-packed and planes 90% full. James May of the Air Transport Association says airlines expect 4% more travelers than last year and are taking steps to try to reduce delays, but says one big variable is always the weather.
We had very positive weather last Thanksgiving, and we had an extremely smooth experience. We are hoping for the same thing this year.
The best advice to travelers, allow plenty of time between connecting flights and get to the airport nice and early. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Washington.
Crew members of the cargo ship that gushed oil into San Francisco Bay have been questioned by federal investigators, and CBS News correspondent Terry Okita reports they might face criminal charges.
The Coast Guard believes there may have been problems involving management and communication between officers on the ship's bridge at the time of the crash. When the ship struck the Bay Bridge, the captain reportedly thought the impact was minor. It caused no damage to the structure, but a huge gash in the vessel's fuel tank.
The Coast Guard blames heavy fog for delays in assessing the scope of the disaster. At first, it said 140 gallons had spilled. It turned out to be 58,000. Less than a quarter of that oil has been recovered. Director Delbert Mann is dead at 87.
Believe me, he was the best.
Ernest Borgnine credits Mann with boosting his career, casting him in the 1955 film production of Marty.
No, Ma, I don't want to go to Stardust Ballroom because all that ever happened to me there was girls made me feel like I was a bug. I got feelings, you know. I had enough pain. I'm going to stay home tonight and watch the hit parade.
You didn't feel like you were actually acting. You felt the part. You felt the character. You felt everything. And he was that kind of a director that got it out of you.
Mann had a long list of credits, mostly in television. He directed more than 100 Playhouse productions. They were live from New York on Sunday night. Producers and Hollywood writers are trading arguments about the issues that led to the strike 7 days ago, but no further talks have been scheduled. It's the same story on Broadway, where the stagehand strike has darkened many stages since Saturday. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason reports.
The theater owners estimate the strike is costing